Stone and DJ Rubik's Cube, along with over 1,000 partygoers. And see for yourself why the Emerald Ballroom stands out above the rest. From the VIP lofts overlooking their spacious dance floor, to the Rock Room and the numerous watering grottos in between. Cover the room in style Friday nights at the Emerald Ballroom with 101 WRIF. The Emerald Ballroom, 31 North Walnut Street, downtown Mount Clemens. It's Detroit's biggest Friday night dance party. The Emerald Ballroom, with the station where the weekend never ends. Riff Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining in some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like McVee's on Telegraph Road in Southfield. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Delbert about the unfortunate Bennifer breakup. Delbert was quite hip to her excessive consumption of new and strange hoagie.
Woo, that skirt would smoke, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Delbert, can you deal with a big ass?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big ass won't turn you around, huh?
I'd rather have a big ass than a broom handle, you know.
I know exactly what you mean. Because she's got a big firm ass, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, you know, it don't just move all around when you pat it.
No, it doesn't.
Drew. That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's Riff.
101.1
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Now it's the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to Meltdown.
Rick's been around a few years, and so, you know, you would think that he'd freak and I'd be the calm professional, but it was the opposite. I'm going, and anyway, be that what it may. Welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining me. WRIF tradition, an institution here with the Riff. Night Call and its predecessors have been on as long as the station has been rocking, way back when it was WXYZ-FM, before it became WRIF. So we go back into the dawn of the day, if you will. And every once in a while, I'll run into somebody who's been back that far, goes back that far. And a lot of times, people will be listening that started listening, like, say, when they were 12 or 13, just a few years ago. So everybody's fine. So we got people. We probably, I would say that the people listening maybe span in ages from, I don't know, 12 into the late 80s. So that's cool. We like that, cross-generational. Somebody emailed me, and I'm not very susceptible to email. In other words, someone can email you and just say, you know, you're stupid, you're dumb. I always loved the guy that said, you have the worst voice I have ever heard on radio. Can't believe that anyone hired you. So this stuff doesn't hurt. And, in fact, I think I've said this before. If you're spending your time emailing insults or stuff like that, I mean, it's really a waste of time. There is absolutely not a thing on the level of insults that you can say that will have any bearing. I mean, people go to my website at peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, and say, I have never seen such an ugly human being on the face of the planet. Yeah, well, damn, you really know how to hurt a guy. Obviously, it doesn't. When you write arguments or, you know, disagreements, things like that, well, I read it. I consider it. I do indeed. You can write to nightcall@wrif.com. Some of you know another one. I just, it all gets way too confusing. But that's a good one to use for tonight. Nightcall@wrif.com. Oh, they got a new thing. They have these re-mailers. So that's, you know, there's no way I can answer you. Somebody wrote me just the most, you know, lengths of insults, all these capital letters. And, yeah, sometimes I even answer those. I say, you know, do you have any arguments? Or is this the way you deal with people in your life, shouting at them? Because, you know, capital letters in email is the equivalent of screaming at someone. And sometimes I've actually been able to get in a dialogue. Sometimes, I think change some minds. Usually not. But at least chill the person out, because it's very unusual to hear someone like myself on the radio. I mean, a lot of you, again, we're talking about people that go way back. What are they? I'm like what they call a heritage jock, right? Maybe that's probably a nicer word than aging or something like that, or even old. But there's a whole bunch of us in town that all of you know from WRIF, from W4 when it used to be a rock station, you know, even WABX and what have you. And we're around at different stations, so we've been around some. In any event, you can email me at nightcall@wrif.com. Call at 313-298-WRIF. Now, how did I start all that? Oh, yeah. The email of someone said, your show is getting boring. Yeah. And when someone says that, I say, okay, I want to have an interesting show. Although a lot of the onus is on you. I mean, I can make my little, what they call this period of talk shows, the monologue. You know, I had a thought escape me. Let me get back to it. A lot of people get upset, I started to say, because they hear somebody with politics to the left of Mussolini on the air. And they're not expecting that. They know that the airwaves are dominated by a few people posing as barely left-of-center liberals, and then you have what's considered the mainstream, which is right-of-center. Then you have all of these conservatives, and then you have all the far-right. There's nobody on the left. There's nobody from the progressive left. There's not anybody that, a liberal in the way it used to be meant, slots on the air. Even though, you can see, Michael Moore's latest book, Dude, Where's My Country? Number one again, number two, Al Franken's, what is it, Lies and the Lying Liars That Tell Them, isn't that the name of it? So there's an enormous constituency of tens of millions of people that are left of center, but as it's pretty evident from what gets programmed, those views are excluded. So sometimes people tune by this when they're not used to this, and they go, I can't believe what this guy said. He said George Bush is a liar. George Bush stole the 2000 election. George Bush is not the greatest president in the world. George Bush wasn't selected by God. He wasn't even selected by the American people. And people go, oh, my God, I've never heard anything like that in my life. That Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and the rest of that gang have lied so badly about so many things, particularly the unnecessary and illegal war against Iraq, that they should be impeached. I'm saying a lot of this to be provocative, but I believe it as well. But anyways, back to the email. So this guy says, your program is getting boring. All you ever talk about is Iraq and the economy. You never talk about anything else. You used to talk about lots of other things, but now all you talk about is Iraq and the economy. You know, not very important things. We could talk about other things, of course. Trying to think what happened. There was the Michigan State game. State lost. That hurt me. Not much, but it did. We could talk about that. Lions won. That's unusual. Talk about that. We could talk about tattoos. Are you ever sorry you had a particular tattoo? We could talk about any of that. Instead of talking about Iraq or the economy or the nature of the government we have, is it this government that is so rooted in mendacity that it's brought politicians to a new height of what we often expect from them? A friend of mine who's a college professor in Chicago Did I tell you this last week? Sounds familiar to me. But hey, I'll say it again. He asked his students, college students, he said, do you believe you're living in history? Do you believe right now you are living in history? And they all look kind of befuddled, like, what the hell is this guy talking about? We are living in history, dear friends, every minute. Now, most of our lives are fairly mundane. We get up, we eat our Wheaties or our granola, and we go off to work or school or, you know, whatever we do, right? Doesn't seem too exciting. But just like, sometimes they're very clear. Sometimes it's very clear. If you're living during World War II, you get the sense that you're in a big-time era. If you're living during the 1960s, there's a sense that this is a period very different from the decade previous. In other words, presidents and civil rights leaders aren't getting assassinated. There's not hundreds of thousands of people in the street. There's not huge riots, you know, 10 years previously. So you get a sense that something unusual is happening. And if you're living then, you know, your parents, your grandparents, you knew this was something out of the ordinary, but not in the sense that then it is when you look back on it, the 40s, the 60s, or what have you. Then it's kind of made bigger than life. But every moment we live, history is being shaped. To a large extent, most of us are observers. We are what's called the objects of history. History acts upon us. The acts of powerful men and institutions act upon us. We passively respond, if at all, and there's not much we do about it. Some people decide to be the subjects of history, in other words, become actors in history. And people do that through a variety of ways, by entering the political system, social system, cultural system, and begin to actually become the ones that generate history. Well, history is being made right now. Most nation states, particularly modern ones, mark their history by the wars that they're involved in. And that's where the great men and heroes arise from. They often become president. One might become president next year. General Wesley Clark, General Dwight Eisenhower, General Grant. Wasn't it some guy like from the Mexican War or something? I don't know, those guys, Zachary Taylor, and I can't really remember all that. But so we're in the midst of a war right now, and we're also in the midst of perhaps a unique change in the way our lives are being lived. Our expectations, both economically and politically and in terms of civil liberties, what's going on. So I'm willing to talk about, do you ever have a tattoo that you were sorry you got? But I would say, because I don't just talk about this stuff all the time. I mean, you know, I talk about light stuff and same things you talk about. But we have a unique opportunity now to discuss the larger issues that frame our lives, and the economy will, and the nature of it, and where we spend our money, and how our tax dollars are used, and what the nature of the political state is. Whether is it just a system to loot us of the wealth we earn every day at work and being turned over to these major corporations on every front, not just Iraq. You know, it's funny how Vietnam almost always escapes my lips whenever I mention Iraq. I noticed one thing. People are talking about these analogies between Vietnam and Iraq, and they're getting stronger and stronger every day. The late folk singer, Phil Oakes, it's O-C-H-S, O-C-H-S, Phil Oakes. If you've never heard of him, just go punch that into a search engine or go to your local record store. And here was a man of the 60s and the 70s that sang these incredible songs. And one song he had was White Boots in a Yellow Land. White Boots in a Yellow Land, talking about the consequences of the United States functioning so far beyond our home geography for these great sort of transnational goals and the consequences of them. I mean, the people that pay the consequences are always the ordinary people. The ordinary people that fight the wars from this country and the ordinary people of other lands that we're trying to help. We tried to help the people of Vietnam back in the 60s and wound up killing about 3 million of them. People still dying today, kids still being malformed from the herbicides, essentially poison gas warfare was used there. And we come to find out there's things like this, geez, I can't remember, what is it, Tiger Platoon or something, that there was this big expose 30 years later of these whole units up in the highlands of Vietnam that tortured people, randomly executed people, took their ears, scalped people. And nothing like that is going on in in Iraq yet. And why I say yet, there's begun a couple of things have begun. The anger, and this is where this stems from, when you're fighting a population, when you're not involved in frontal warfare, when that old thing from Vietnam, you never can tell when a mama-san or a kid has a grenade beneath their clothing. That's where that slogan came from, kill them all and let God sort them out. And what we hear about more and more when there are these attacks on American troops in Iraq, the troops fight back or shoot back randomly into crowds. And are these men, these horrible, evil, beastly men, our sons and some of our daughters over there, our brothers and our fathers? Well, it's the kind of jackpot that you get put in by these, the brightest and the best, the suits that inhabit the White House and the Pentagon and the Defense Department and the State Department, who make the decision to send our young men and women, in some cases men in their 30s and 40s, over to places like Iraq to take off in helicopters that can then get shot down, and 16 Americans killed today, 20 wounded. Now we're up towards almost 400 wounded and over 2,000 seriously wounded. We're talking about hundreds dead of Americans, thousands wounded. And I get this email. That's what brings me back to email. You can email me at nightcall@wrif.com. You can call me at 313-298-WRIF. What happened? Writes Mark. The GNP, the gross national product, rose 7% under Bush, and the president put an end to the torture in Iraq. I thought you said he was a liar and all he wanted was oil. Well, this is one of these things where it could take like a second to tie this knot and probably an hour for me to untie it. The economy still sucks, you know, even though the wealthy have cashed in quite greatly, in this period. This advance of the GNP, mostly fueled by debt. The idea, the continuing lie that we've all shared in this tax system that Bush put in to benefit the wealthy, is also, they're saying this is what's caused it, because now we've gotten so much money back, we're beginning to spend. Well, the wealthy have almost everything they can buy already, so they're not spending. And you and I, the average American, got so little. In fact, tens of millions of people got nothing. That this is not what's, this isn't what is fueling things. A couple of things. One is people have done a lot of refinancing. And if they're going to refinance their house, say for $50,000, they'll borrow $55,000. Against the house, so they have an extra $5,000 that they've borrowed at 4.5% or 5%. So that's more debt that's being accumulated. A lot of it just on credit cards, and then there corporations and wealthy people they have more money. They just have more money. They're making lots of money. Our tax dollars are going to these big corporations for the billions of dollars that are being spent to rebuild Iraq after those same their brother corporations destroyed Iraq. So this is where it's all coming from. And it's a nation that's staggering in debt. It has the highest national debt of any country in the history of the world and any country in the United States. Any time in United States history. And what goes on here is that then every penny spent is borrowed. So the whole country is in debt. And that means then that we begin paying this off through our taxes, because you have to pay, as you know, when you buy a house or a car, you have to pay. You pay on the principal and you pay on the interest. It's more smoke and mirrors. And so somebody like Mark, he sees, the economy has grown by 7%. We also lost 85,000 jobs last month. Jobs are still beginning to hemorrhage out of here. And as the industrial base begins to flee the United States, and other people lose that job, and then they begin to cycle back into jobs, it's not into similar jobs at all. I was listening to Dick Shoemaker last night. Yeah, I hosted the second annual Southeast Michigan Jobs with Justice dinner. It was an award dinner, and it was given to Dick Shoemaker of the UAW International Executive Board. And he was saying that, you know, capitalism's cyclical and there'd be layoffs. And he knew back when he was a young man in the 50s that if he got laid off, you know, then he'd go called back to his job in auto. And then he might get laid off in another 5 years, but then he could call back. That's not happening now. These jobs are going away, these manufacturing jobs, thanks to things like NAFTA and this proposed free trade area of the Americas. People see their jobs leave, and if they're lucky enough to get a job, it's a job that's at something similar to Walmart or McDonald's or what have you. Have you noticed less and less teenagers at these fast food places and more adults, people in 30s, 40s, 50s even? Also, number of hungry families in the U.S. are rising. Wealthiest country in the world. America, number one. Number one in what? Guns sold. Weapons sold to the third world. By the way, not exclusively, but a good number of American deaths are at the hands of American weapons. The United States sells weapons all over the world, and then these are not only turned on fellow countrymen in country after country, but then they're also used on the United States. About 12 million American families, that's not people, that's families, 12 million American families last year were worried they couldn't afford to buy food. And 32% of them actually experienced someone going hungry at one time or another. It's third year in a row that the Department of Agriculture has seen this occur. Most poor families struggling with hunger try to ensure their children are fed. Nonetheless, one or more children in an estimated 265,000 families on occasion missed meals last year because the families either couldn't afford to eat or didn't have enough food at home. Crime rising from the 1990s continued to tick upward in 2002 for the second straight year after record lows in the 1990s. Report that cities show increases in rapes, homicide, and burglaries. Kind of tied into poverty. Poverty's rising, more families in poverty. The Bush, a friend of mine who's a talk show host, calls it the Bush crime family. I like that. Under the misrule of the illegitimate president, this country is swiftly going down the drain. And it's not, you know, you go to some regions. I go out in some of these, middle class and affluent suburbs. Man, everybody's got new cars. Everybody's got nice clothes on, buying food in expensive restaurants, talking about the vacations they're going to go on. But it's beginning to fray real badly around the edges. So we're talking about 12 million families at risk from hunger. We're talking about things really starting to fray in the wealthiest country in the world, number one, who is now trapped in this war that continues on. This is called low-intensity warfare. Except when we see 16 Americans, actually another three were killed as well. This is hardly rates at low intensity. And let's see. Of course, one of the guys that lied about it all and continues to, Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld, he said, in a long, hard war, we're going to have tragic days, but they're necessary. Sorry about that. I guess we're going to have more of these. Doesn't matter that everything that that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Colin Powell said about why we needed to go to the war against Iraq turned out to be a monstrous lie, and now our men and women are dying. Though a few, this is after the Chinook helicopter got shot down, though a few villagers tried to help, we're over there trying to help these people, right? Many celebrated word of the helicopter downing, as well as a fresh attack on U.S. soldiers in Fallujah. One Fallujah resident who would not give his name said this was a new lesson from the resistance, a lesson to the greedy aggressors. That's the people that died from our country. That's how they're being characterized by these people in Iraq. They'll never be safe until they get out of our country. In the field south of Fallujah, some villagers proudly showed off blackened pieces of the Chinook's wreckage to arriving reporters. Sounds like Black Hawk Down in Mogadishu, doesn't it? This is what Bush has got us into. He lied to get us into. Now they kind of shifted. Oh, it's because Saddam Hussein was such an awful man. We just discovered that. Bush's dad apparently didn't know that when he supported Saddam Hussein. Donald Rumsfeld apparently didn't know that when he went over there and shook hands with Saddam Hussein. Ronald Reagan apparently didn't know that when he sent all of our tax dollars over there to aid Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. All right, I'd like to hear from you as well. And remember, you can bring up anything you please. 313-298-WRIF. Rick Fox, line number one. Thank you, sir. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, this is Maurice, long-time listener.
Hey, Maurice.
You know, I thought I'd never live to see that we have a woman in the president, as for president.
A woman? What woman?
The bitch we got in the White House called Bush.
God, that's terrible. I don't even know why I'm laughing.
Because you know what, man? He took our money as taxpayers and invested in the two illegal wars for a private sector to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what?
What?
Anybody vote him back in office need to be kicked. We're losing too many people. They need to pull our forces out and tell Iraq to kiss our... You are red, white, and blue, red ears, they can kiss it.
Well, don't you think we owe them, though, given the fact that we destroyed the country? I mean, what really has to happen? And I don't know whether this would solve things or not, but to get the U.S. out and get the United Nations in and have it understood that the United Nations is going to be there just real quickly to turn everything over to the Iraqis, including all of their oil reserves, of which only Iraqis would be the owners of.
Peter, they can't do that because they got too much money invested into the war. They got to have 100% control or to get their money back out of the war.
That's right. No, I know that's true. But somebody should eat it, and it shouldn't be the Iraqi people, and it shouldn't be the American people. It should be the people that have benefited financially and politically, and that's Bush and his big corporate pals.
Okay, Peter, can I draw you a scenario?
Okay, go ahead, Maurice.
Okay, this country got a problem. You know what this problem is?
What's that?
We can go over into somebody else's country and try to control them, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't take care of our own business at home, okay? Supposing UN draw up a resolution and tell the United States, okay, you have a problem with your inner city. You cannot control the crime and the dope in the country. So we're going to send in UN troops to control it, and the United States must cut back their war thing. You know these arrogant SOBs would not do that. It'd be this country against the world.
Well, I know. There's no way in the world that we would ever allow some of the things the United States decides up on. It's going to enforce on other countries to have that happen here as well. Maurice, welcome back. Thanks for joining me on Night Call. Appreciate it. I'm Peter Werby, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
Hey, if I may add, I like your show. I hear it all the time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love heavy metal and all, but you know, I like to hear some talking on the radio every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got a couple of questions I want to ask.
Sure.
How's your feelings on legalization of marijuana?
Well, I'll tell you, man, I think that marijuana is like... a really terrible thing, Matt. Nobody should do it. What were we talking about? Oh, man, I am so hungry. I got to get some cookies. What's the other question?
Well, and gun control.
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't it make sense that if you outlaw all the guns and the people who actually want to go and kill other people, when they find some other...
Strangle them with their bare hands.
Yeah, or a knife.
Chop them up in little pieces.
Yeah. You know,
split their heads with axes.
They'd find something else they use to kill them off.
Impale them with the ends of something. I don't know. What's sharp?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, fortunately, I don't know, or whatever. Gun abolition is not on anyone's agenda, and most of the laws in place. In fact, most of the laws, you know, the NRA right now is on this campaign to repeal these statutes that were passed against assault weapons, and also want to weaken these laws that would hold gun shops responsible for where the guns that they have wind up. You know, this whole thing about the D.C. sniper. His gun came from this store out in Washington where that has lost like something like 800 guns. Like, hey, where are the guns, man? Well, I don't know. They must have just got lost. I wish I could find this site. It was called like NRA Petition. I'll have to find that for you. All right. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete. What's happening?
Yeah, doing this talk show.
All right, well, I'm going to switch it up for you again to stay off of Iraq and the economy.
Sure.
Because it is getting a little old, kind of. Well, you can tell because most people that call agree with you. And, you know, that's how you make it interesting. You know, the people out there, they know they have no argument, so they don't call you. So you need another issue because everybody's with you on the war.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess let's go back to gun control, just where you were at. And you don't think that the left, bunch of people on the left, think that handguns should be outlawed? Isn't that a big movement?
It's certainly not a big movement. And the groups that are like, what is it, like handgun control something or other. No, I mean, they realize that it is such an unrealizable political goal. And that it almost seems foolish in its undertaking. And so, no, if you go to these gun control sites that I've ever seen or people I've ever spoken to or interviewed on there, they usually have things they want, trigger locks, and they want sharper control over, you know, who has access to them and what have you. But if there is an organization of any prominence or of any renown, or maybe even at all, that is advocating complete disarmament of the American people, I have never seen them. That's like an NRA boogeyman.
Right. Well, I'm sure I'm thinking that because of the, you know, NRA propaganda I read and see. But we'll take a year ago. Remember the CCW laws that were going to go into effect here in Detroit? And I know a lot of people were against it on the left. I don't know if you were.
I did not like the idea of it. In fact, it's interesting. I mean, I'm always willing to say I was wrong. And you know, I thought most of the people that did not own a bar or stuff like that or a shop owner had no need for them. And the only people that were going to wind up getting them were kind of these wacky guys that felt comfortable when they had this little hard cold killing machine strapped on them when they were driving around in their big truck. And I did not like the idea of it all. Subsequently, very few people in terms of the population have even applied for them. And secondly, so far, I haven't seen any great harm come from them.
Right. Well, the stats are in from what I've heard. And you said that not too many people applied, but I heard that crime rates have, percentage-wise, have decreased in all the counties where it was put into effect.
Well, it's in...
Subsequently, in Macomb County, they already had the CCW permits in effect, and the crime rate didn't move at all. It didn't go up or down. But in the counties that it was put into effect, crime rate actually dropped.
Well, you know, there's some phrase in Latin which I can never remember, which means just because something followed something doesn't mean that it was caused by it. And you're talking, particularly Macomb County, you're talking about an area that has relatively low crime to begin with. And I've oftentimes I'd get these kind of slightly angry guys that are talking about how can I assure them that their family will be safe and, you know, if they don't have a gun with them at all times. And they live in some area where the kind of crime that could be stopped by someone having a gun is almost like non-existent. I mean, how many cars get carjacked out in, you know, rural Macomb County?
Well, Livingston County is the example where there's pretty much no crime in Livingston County. They got Brighton. You know, that's the big crime sector. and there's no crime out there, but the percentage actually shows that crime went down in that county in the last year.
No, but there's how many CCW permits were issued?
Well, I have no idea.
I'll bet you like 150.
I doubt it. The person you described, the guy you described, the angry white guy in his big truck, that guy's from Livingston County.
Yeah.
And he wants a CCW.
Right.
So I'm saying it's a lot. You would expect a lot of people in Livingston County went and got their CCW just to have it, just to show it off.
But they don't. They didn't.
Well, I would imagine they did.
Let's not spend a lot of time debating facts that neither of us know. I'm saying that overall in the state, that the people that applied was way below expectations, and there hasn't been any demonstrable problem with the people that have, and probably the percentage in each county is so low that the idea that it would have an impact on crime seems rather dubious. There's lots of things that affect crime. A lot of it.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, it didn't go up.
All right. The argument
against it doesn't play out at all against the CCWs because crime didn't go up. You know, there were actually less gun murders, people killed by gun, and yeah. Maybe it helped it, maybe it didn't, but it didn't show a rise.
Right. Well, yeah, I and other people were worried that, in fact, it would. There were some statistics from other states, notably Texas, where there was a higher percentage of violations among gun violations among people who had CCWs, but maybe that's just Texas. Maybe people here in this area got a little more sense. I just think, look, I'm a gun owner, and they have very specific, role to play in my life. Most of it is, pretty out of sight. I think that anybody that feels that they have to carry a gun, and if they don't, if they're not carrying around lots of cash, but just in general have to carry a gun in order to feel safe, is running at such a high level of paranoia that the problem isn't with society, that it's their level of fearfulness. And I got to take a break.
All right, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing it up. All right, bye-bye. And if you got other subjects, you know the number. Here it comes.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Hear that? Scary, huh? This is attorney Brian Thomas Daly of Daly & Stern at 877-520-1200. That's 877-520-1200. Are you in trouble with the law? Are you saying to yourself, if only I can get out of this one, I'll never get in trouble again? You're looking for a miracle. What you really need is a good, tough lawyer. If you've recently been charged with a misdemeanor or a felony, or if you've got a warrant for your arrest, then you need to call me, attorney Brian Thomas Daly, at 877-520-1200. That's 877-520-1200. We're tough. We have a great reputation with courts and with prosecutors. We know how to try cases to win your freedom, protect your reputation, and save your money. Have you recently lost your driver's license, or is the Secretary of State threatening to suspend or revoke it? Going up against the Secretary of State is a lot tougher than it used to be. That's why you need to call me, attorney Brian Thomas Daly of Daly & Stern, at 877-520-1200. If you want to stop worrying about getting caught behind the wheel without a license, then you need to call me, attorney Brian Thomas Daly of Daly & Stern, at 877-520-1200. We'll help you get back in control of your life and get out of the system. That's attorney Brian Thomas Daly at 877-520-1200.
Sunday nights rock at the Hot Rock Cafe.
Only the best live local bands that the Motor City has to offer are on stage for you. Sunday nights at the Hot Rock in Warren. Join me, the Doc, Doug Podell, from 101 WRIF tonight for the most outrageous Sunday night party in Metro Detroit. And it's only at the Hot Rock Cafe.
Get yourself a little rock and roll ear candy with the Motor City's very own Masquerade.
And then take in a feast for the eyes with the Hot Rock Hot Bod Contest.
Pick up on killer riff giveaways. Plus, the first 101 people through the door will score a pair of tickets to see Lacuna Coil in concert. Knock back great $2 bottled beers and get your hands on the Hot Rocks awesome shot specials all throughout the night while you rock out with Masquerade.
Join me, the Doc, Doug Podell, from 101 WRIF this Sunday night.
Come on out and party with the Doc, Doug Podell, and hear live local rock from Masquerade. It's all going down at the Hot Rock Cafe.
The Hot Rock Cafe on Hoover Road, just south of 10 Mile in Warren.
Sunday night's rock at the Hot Rock Cafe.
Okay, two blades are better than one, and three blades are better than two. And that's as good as it gets, right? wrong. The new Schick Quattro has the power of four blades and two conditioning strips, which makes Quattro unlike any other razor. And those four blades give you an incredibly close, smooth shave. So your 5 o'clock shadow shows up late. Four blades? Where will it stop? Here with Schick Quattro. The power of four.
And when you stop in at CVS Pharmacy, you'll find Schick Quattro razors in the health and beauty aisle. Your neighborhood CVS has everything you need to look and feel your best. From Schick Quattro razors that give you an incredibly close, smooth shave, to CVS shaving cream. And for super savings, always use your CVS Extra Care card. It's the best way to shop and the best way to save every day. So stop by CVS and pick up Schick Quattro for an incredibly close, smooth shave. Available now at CVS Pharmacy.
Attention homeowners, 3.99. You heard it right, 3.99%. American Equity Mortgage has just lowered interest rates. Effective immediately, American Equity is offering you a never-before-advertised 3.99 rate. This is for a very limited time only, so I urge you to call now. American Equity Mortgage guarantees to save you money at 3.99, and American Equity Mortgage will help you pay off all those 18% credit cards that have proven to cost you money every month. You gotta love it at 3.99. Can you believe it? You know it won't last too long. American Equity Mortgage makes it fast and easy. 3.99. Call now. 888-71-LOAN-1. 888-71-L-O-A-N. Then the number one. American Equity Market. The future belongs to you. 3.99 can't last too long. Call now. 888-71-LOAN-1. 888-71-L-O-A-N. Then the number one.
Rate subject to change. APR 4.189. Rate subject to increase after consummation.
Musicians, keep your cash. Right now, take the gear you want and pay nothing. Zero. Zip. Nada. Come in, pick up the gear you need, and pay nothing until 2005. This is your chance. It's Guitar Center's Pay Another Day 005 financing event. No minimum. No payments. No interest. It's simple. Guitar Center has made one-time-only financing arrangements with all the top gear manufacturers. Gibson. Yamaha. DRS. No minimum. Line 6. Roland. Blue. Boss. No payments. Pearl. Zildjian. Tama. LP. No interest. And all at the nation's guaranteed lowest prices. Strats to stacks. Mics to mixers. Add anything to your qualifying purchase and get the same great financing deal. And get this. Demo the revolutionary new Bose personalized amplification system at select guitar centers. Pay Another Day 005 financing event. No minimum. No payments. No interest. Keep your cash. Get what you want. Don't miss it.
During Funjet Vacations Bring a Friend Sale, you and a friend can save up to $170 at select Palace Resorts in the Mayan Riviera and Cancun. At these luxurious all-inclusive resorts, you and a friend will enjoy breathtaking beaches, swimming pools, soothing spa treatments, and fabulous restaurants where all beverages and meals are included. So imagine relaxing on the beach in the Mayan Riviera or Cancun, exploring quaint villages, snorkeling or golfing by day, and enjoying lively and enchanting entertainment by night. With Funjet Vacations, you'll not only save up to $170, but you'll get nonstop flights to Cancun from Detroit Metro. To plan your Funjet Vacations getaway this winter and save up to $170 at select Palace Resorts, contact a travel agent at 1-800-FUNJET-1 or visit funjet.com. That's 1-800-FUNJET-1 or funjet.com.
The $170 per reservation savings is valid on 7-night double occupancy January-February vacations at the Aventura Spa Palace via Ryan International Airlines. International taxes and fees are not included. Restrictions apply. See the Funjet Vacations Bill of Rights for information regarding cancellations, refunds, etc.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. One of our callers in the first segment of the program said, why keep talking about Iraq? Everyone listening to this broadcast appears to agree with you. Well, it's not entirely true. But Bush is losing his support on Iraq, according to a brand new ABC News Washington Post poll. 51% of Americans disapprove of his Iraq policy. And I think if you did an area one around here, I think it'd probably be about two-thirds. You know that thing I always say about from Lincoln, you can fool all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, and the some of the people you can fool all the time, that's the third left that still believe that there was some decent reason for attacking Iraq other than empire and oil and Bush's political standing. Most Americans believe, 62% say the level of U.S. casualties is unacceptable. So there's a third of the people, the ones you can fool all the time, saying, that's all right. 16, of course, this was taken before today's events where 19 Americans were killed. 16 American soldiers died in a helicopter crash, 20 wounded. And the thousands of American soldiers that are wounded, this is really worth it to you? Rumsfeld, Secretary of War, said this is necessary. Well, it's easy for him, isn't it? 10% of Americans say Bush has made the nation more prosperous. I like the way they put it. In other words, 90% of us say that he has not made it more prosperous. And 58%, a new high, all again, almost two-thirds, say the president fails to understand our problems. His handling of the economy, 53% disapproving. 45% approve the way he's handling the economy? All right, your call is 313-298-WRIF. That's our phone number here. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. Mike here.
Hi, Mike.
No, I think the problem is you're not doing it long enough. Your counterpart, that big, fat, pill-popping guy, who's been constantly beating up on Bill Clinton, I sometimes listen to his show to try and see how many minutes we go into the show before he mentions the name.
You mean that drug addict that's in rehab now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the bottom line is much like he gets people who agree with him all the time, you just got to keep talking about it, and then you can sign a $285 million contract, too, and you can become rich doing this. So,
damn. Yeah, he did get – you know, I didn't understand that. They paid him $285 million, right?
So well, you can buy more pills that way.
Yeah. He had quite a habit. But – you know, I'm so easy. I would do his gig for 10%. So I would do it for $2.85 million. I mean, wouldn't
that's
you think?
That's only 1%.
Is it?
That's only 1%. Yeah.
Oh, you're
10%
right.
10% would be $28 million.
Oh yeah, I'd do it for 1%. So
yeah.
So think about how much politics are involved. These companies are willing to spend 99% more in order to get this this conservative ideologue on the air when he's not stoned out, and here I'm willing to cut my rates by 99%. By the way, Davis writes in tonight, call it WRIF.com, talking about these deaths today in Iraq. He says, "Come on, Peter, you know it's all Clinton's fault."
Oh yeah, well everything. If you just listen to that stuff long enough, everything's Clinton's fault. I mean. I did find it interesting. At one point, I called my wife in front of the television this morning. All four channels had the Donald on at one time during the Sunday morning stuff this morning.
The Secretary of War?
Absolutely.
So, how do they do that?
And it was, you know, they had the same tie on. So, I mean, I knew it was, you know, it was a go from here to there to there. But anytime you're trying to sell anything that hard, it can't be good for you.
No.
It can't be good for you.
Well, what I don't understand, of course I do understand perfectly, but what would seem logical in a world that says that it encourages, or in a, not say a world, but in a political system like ours, it says that the basis of it is democratic interchange and dialogue, that you would have always the opposition to the current people in power, giving the other side, particularly when the Bush and his gang are on the losing side increasingly of all the poll numbers. So every article that would say, President Bush says today, blah, 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 you would think they would automatically have something either from one of the organizations that has opposed Bush's war all along or a Democratic senator or somebody refuting his continued attempt to associate the invasion of Iraq with terrorism and 9/11 and all of that. He keeps up this monstrous lie. And the reason it's a monstrous lie is that thousands of people have died because of his lie. I mean, that's the old mantra. I mean, it's a mantra that's become an old mantra by now, that Clinton lied, nobody died. Bush lied, people died. And we're talking about thousands of people, hundreds of Americans, thousands of Americans wounded, thousands and thousands of Iraqis killed, even more, maybe 20,000 or more Iraqis seriously wounded. And you still have these people, well, he saved them from torture. Man, I hope no one ever saves me or my family or my community like that.
That's a big thank you. The weapons of mass destruction are on every street corner. Oops, redraw the line. Oops. Well, we did it for humanitarian reasons. There's countries that are what's going on in the Congo and stuff like that is 10 times greater than went on in Iraq. And I'm not trying to deify Saddam Hussein. The man's a pig, whatever, all the bad words you can think of. But if we're doing this purely on humanitarian reasons, there's a lot of other places you can get a bigger bang for your buck, and you can go in and they'll roll over a lot easier than these guys.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I was watching Foxhole News.
Oh, yeah, the Fair and Balanced.
Without the sound, and they must have had something on about Iraq, and it was they had continued footage of American soldiers there, and it looked like a cross between inner city cops in the 60s or the 70s and the Israeli army in occupied Palestine. Again, if someone says, "Oh, there he goes, disrespecting our troops," if any of us were sent over there and put in a situation where a good sector of the population despised us, were plotting their attacks on us, that saw us, shooting down civilians, we would, and got responded to like that, we would probably act no differently. It's a situation in which no American soldier should be, and because of and this is the nicest word I'm going to say about him all night, the mistakes that Bush and his gang have made, thousands of people, including hundreds of Americans, have paid with their lives.
Well, I may be giving credit to the wrong newspaper, but I believe it was the Christian Science Monitor is being quoted as talking about all the good things that have taken place in Iraq in recent weeks. The electric grid being back up to what it was prior to our involvement there. The schools up and running, teachers making multiples more money than they were before. The hospitals all open, so on and so forth. So my response to that is, so why are we still there? If everything's back up running the way it was and we've gotten rid of the bad guy, isn't that what we went over there to do? Now let's leave. I mean, why are we keeping American people as sitting ducks out there? I mean, one guy a guy from Michigan was killed playing basketball there last week.
Really?
What's up with that? I want my brother, my cousin doing that? That's crazy.
Well, let's look at it another way. They're talking about the good news. Iraq, because of these unwarranted sanctions since 1991 that have resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of children and hundreds of thousands of adults, they had a functioning electrical grid. They had hospitals. They had operational schools. They had communication systems and what have you. The American people, through Bush's illegal, unconstitutional, unnecessary war, destroyed all of that. So now we're supposed to say, oh, gee, aren't they doing good? They have, a little bit of the electrical grid up. They're going to school again. Well, they were going to school before the United States invaded. They have hospitals running again. Well, the hospitals, again, although they were denied all of what they needed to really help the sick in Iraq, the civilians, they had hospitals. What happened is all of this was, the whole infrastructure was destroyed by Bush's war and invasion, and now Bush wants us to say, oh, look how great the United States is doing in improving the day-to-day living standards of the Iraqi people. We've brought them back up to the miserable situation they were in prior to us almost bombing them back into the Stone Age. Forget it. Mike, thanks.
You bet. Take care, Pete.
All right. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. It's Barry.
Hi, Barry.
I got a different topic here.
Sure.
Something I've been wanting to get the word out on. Our hybrid cars.
Yeah.
You know, like the Toyota Prius and the Honda.
Yeah.
These things are actually pretty toxic to the body, and people aren't realizing it.
Toxic to the body?
Yeah.
I thought this was like the answer to it all.
It is in one way, but in another way it's not. I used to know a guy that had one of those Hondas, and he would drive an hour each way, working back. Well, as the week would progress, his energy levels were dropping, and he never had that problem before with all his previous vehicles. So he researched it, and what he did was he got what's called a GOSS meter, G-O-S-S, and he read the book and found out what was supposed to be safe that our bodies could accept. And he got the meter and he tested his car. Well, the book says what's safe is 1.5 GOSS. Okay?
Yeah.
He took the GOSS meter, went to different parts of his car to see what the electromagnetic frequencies were in various parts of his car. What he was finding was it was way over that 1.5. And right around his chest, around his heart, he was finding that, I think he said it was about 113. And that was explaining why he was losing energy, feeling lousy as the week progressed.
Don't we have some product we always advertise on this station that's supposed to take care of that? Testosterone or something like that? Testosterol, I guess it is. Probably have an ad for it soon. Well, I don't know, Barry. I'm a little suspicious of that. I mean,
well, I saw it. I saw it, and he even tested my car, too. My car came up pretty safe, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I've got a Yukon. It came up. The worst thing was 10, and it was either by the receiver or it was by the speaker. We went out. We walked the parking lot. He was just giving me ideas of what goes on, what we deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
Went up to the power lines and moved closer and farther away from them, you know, and saw how the meter would shift. And he never had that problem before until he got that hybrid car. Those things are loaded with batteries.
Right.
But he drove an hour. You know, he drove 2 hours a day. Most people don't do that. They don't realize it as much.
All right. I mean, it's interesting, but... it's the kind of thing that you got to really have a lot more research on before you want to make a pronouncement like that, wouldn't you think?
Well, he doesn't have the problem anymore when he got rid of the car.
That's what they call anecdotal evidence that scientists always reject, but sometimes,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is. Well,
proof's in the pudding.
I wouldn't sit on that information. You know what I'm saying? I would kind of like bring it through to... I got to be some group interested in that.
Well, yeah, actually, I could take it to Sierra Club or something like
that.
Go check it out.
Don't take it to Toyota, man. You might just disappear.
Well, you think they're going to tell people about it?
All right, thank you, Barry.
All right, dude, thanks.
I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
So, you're at the bar with your...
boyfriend.
Girlfriend.
Enjoying a great-tasting Miller Lite. As the waitress brings you another round, you wonder...
when is he gonna propose?
Where the heck are my chicken strips?
Because...
we've been dating for years.
The cheese sticks didn't fill me up.
Then, a film crew taking auditions for a Miller Lite commercial passes your table, which immediately shifts your thoughts away from...
the idiot I'm dating.
Deep-fried poultry.
To thoughts of fame and fortune. So, you mug for the camera with Miller Lite in tow and bust out your A material concerning...
males and their aversion to commitment.
The lack of service in this joint.
This impromptu outburst sends a ripple of satisfaction surging through your person, motivating you to...
grab another Miller Lite.
Grab another Miller Lite.
Before you head back to your table, where you'll...
kick him to the curb.
Pray for both barbecue sauce and honey mustard.
Miller Lite is taking auditions at a bar near you. Grab a Miller Lite. Be on TV. Certain restrictions apply. Live responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
When you got it, you got it. Charisma, charm, and a dad who was bald by 30. Hey, do I sound worried? I'm using Men's Rogaine, which contains the only FDA-approved topical ingredient proven to regrow hair. Alright, so Rogaine helps me look good, but the stunning personality... that was mine to begin with.
Rogaine works. The sooner the better. Come see the proof at Rogaine.com. Not everyone responds to Rogaine. Individual results vary.
Men, there's no time like the present to finally do something about your thinning hair. Just pick up Men's Rogaine, regular or extra strength, at Walgreens. Read and follow the directions, and you could be on your way back to a full head of hair in no time. It's that easy. There's no excuse. You can stop hiding under hats and start regrowing your own hair with a little help from Rogaine. Men's Rogaine at your nearby Walgreens.
Choosing the right career is an important decision. Currently, the United States Secret Service is recruiting applicants for its uniform division. The position demands integrity, a great work ethic, and an appreciation for teamwork. Uniformed division police officers are responsible for protecting the president, vice president, and visiting world leaders, as well as performing a variety of law enforcement related duties. If you would like to learn more about this excellent career opportunity, bring your resume to the U.S. Secret Service Career Fair, Saturday, November 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency Dearborn, 600 Town Center Drive. That's Saturday, November 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency Dearborn. For additional information, contact the Detroit Field Office at 313-226-6400 or visit our website at www.secretservice.gov. Applicants must be between the ages of 21 and 36 and willing to relocate to the Washington, D.C. area. The Secret Service is an equal opportunity employer.
When the moment
happens when you give her an amazing holiday gift from J.B. Robinson Jewelers? You instantly become the guy other women use as an example. As in, did you see what Bob gave Beth? Why can't you be more like that? Which is good. For over 70 years, the experts at JBR have been, well, experts at helping guys like you find the perfect gift. They ask the right questions and have all the right answers. Like an extensive selection of beautiful diamond bracelets, priced from $99.99 to $2,500. Plus, while love comes with no guarantee, JBR has a 90-day money-back guarantee. Just remember these love letters.
Shop J.B. Robinson Jewelers, 9 convenient locations. Free financing for 1 year available. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payments required.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. We're into our second hour. Please join us. And let's see, at 1 o'clock tonight, I'm going to be interviewing nationally syndicated columnist Alexander Coburn. This is funny. His name is Alexander Coburn. It's an old, isn't it? It's kind of Scottish or something, but it's spelled C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N, but it's pronounced, thankfully, Coburn. I actually heard him on a show one time, and they pronounced it the way it looks like it's spelled, you know, which sounds like something would happen. What? I mean, after you slid on a rug or something like that? I don't know. I don't want to go there. Anyways, he's an old pal of mine, too, so I hope he doesn't mind me making fun of his name. He can make fun of my name. Anyway, Alexander Coburn's going to talk about this very interesting book that he co-edited called The Politics of Anti-Semitism. All of this, by the way, is on my website if you want to see this, because it has links to aspects of you know, the guest's book and what have you. It's peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. Then at about 1:30, we're going to be talking with Peter Kornbluh. He's written a book. He's a researcher. I've had him on before. It's called The Pinochet Files. Pinochet was the fascist dictator of Chile for about 17 years, and it's a declassified dossier on atrocity and accountability. This all occurred, the overthrow of the democratically elected Chilean government in 1973, because the United States, Nixon, and particularly Kissinger, who's a war criminal who belongs on trial in The Hague for the damage he's done to democratic systems and civilians around the world, from Chile and Argentina and Vietnam particularly. In fact, Kissinger cannot go to about 42 countries because there are subpoenas waiting for him where people that have been the victims of his, I don't know, what's a good word for it? I mean, what are you when you put a fascist in power? I guess a fascist as well. Anyways, that's all at 1 o'clock tonight. Also coming up, presented by an educational group for teachers and students and parents called the Rouge Forum, R-O-U-G-E, like, you know, the Rouge plant or something. They're going to have Lessons of War, a teach-in for a democratic society. It's going to be this coming Saturday, November 8th at Wayne State. I'm going to be speaking about what we talk about a lot here, democratic discourse. Man, I got to find something a little snappier. In other words, what's the nature of our discussion politically about the world in which we inhabit, and what room is there, I guess, for dissenting opinion? Let's see. Okay. Also, as well, a call here to boycott Borders books until they recognize their unions. Their union, rather. The Borders CEO makes about $23 million a year. He pays his workers $9 an hour. And so, understandably, the workers at the Borders flagship store in Ann Arbor, store number one, have voted in a union, about 92%. So you would have thought that this company that makes such an extraordinary profit, about $127 million for a bookstore chain, they would say, okay, maybe we're going to cut loose about $3 million and give everyone the princely sum of, say, $10.50 an hour. What does that get you? That gets you about $25,000 a year, a little more, right? Some of these people, I was talking to them at this dinner that I hosted last night, the Jobs with Justice Awards dinner, and this one guy has been there like for 18 years, another one for 13 years. They got families, and they're making $9.50 an hour. Anyways, Borders has spent millions trying to block these unions over the last 5 or 6 years. They employ these big, powerful anti-union firm. So the call is out. Boycott Borders until they recognize their union. People are taking action against Borders books, stores, outlets all across the country in terms of picket lines and what have you. There's also a Borders Union Strike Fund benefit. It looks like they might go on strike. And it's going to be Monday, November 10th at the ARC in Ann Arbor. So support these people. You know, as the manufacturing base flees out of the country, that means that the working class of America doesn't have the benefit of those as much any longer of good-paying American union jobs. And there's a move afoot to probably reduce a good two-thirds of the country to peonage. So don't let it happen. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how's it going? This is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hey, I have a kind of a sweeping generalization on Democratic discourse, especially from the left.
Sure.
You.
Sure.
I think part of the reason, a lot of people don't take you guys seriously, and I think you have to admit right now you're having problems with people taking you seriously, is a overwhelming lack of solutions. For example, you bring in, rightfully so, a lot of critiques on, say, Cold War policy. But I never once read a book, a leftist book, with a Cold War solution. In fact, you more tend to say that there was no Cold War. Or you just brought up the sanctions in Iraq in 91. Well, how about a solution of how you would have handled it? Would you,
well,
even now you're blaming Rumsfeld for how he, at one time, armed Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
But, how about a solution? How maybe you would have handled the geopolitical situation in the middle of an expansionist Soviet Union that was trying to take over the world?
Well, it's thoughtful of you to actually set the stage for me to go on an extended discourse. I appreciate that. But let me go to your premises. I don't know who is not taking people on the left seriously. It appears that perhaps people aren't being taken seriously because they're given precious few moments on corporate-owned and conservative-owned media to ever speak their mind. And conservatives have so seized, in the same manner that a minority candidate that got the minority of votes was able to seize the presidency and work out a far right-wing agenda, similarly in the media. So you have these spokespeople that dominate the discourse, not allowing anything else to intervene, trying to always to marginalize people that have, as I always call it, politics of the left of Mussolini, and to the point now where you have the people like these that wacky Ditz and Coulter writing a book called Treason, so saying that that liberals and Democrats actually weren't wrong, didn't not have solutions, but in fact were traitors.
Well, okay, you're picking one book out, and I kind of figured you might say the media thing, and it actually reminds me a lot of the far right excuses for things too. But
why the far right? What excuses do they have? They're in power. They have they have this farthest right wing president that has ever inhabited the White House, and this was a guy like Boykin. Remember General Boykin? What a name! But anyways, General Boykin, who says that George Bush did not receive the majority of votes of the American people. I said, I can't believe he's bringing this up. He said, do you know why he's in the White House? Because God has placed him in the White House. And that's exactly what this this wingnut in the White House believes about himself.
Well, I don't know about all that. But,
well.
And another thing with the media, you're right. There is the AM radio, the Fox News. But there's also the New York Times, the written media. media is pretty liberal. And then you have the schools and universities. I mean, that is just chock full of your political agenda. I mean, it never ends. There is no conservative side in the universities.
No, there isn't. But here, there's a book called out. It's called The Faith of George W. Bush. It's written by a Christian author, as he identifies himself, Stephen Mansfield. He quotes Bush. Talk about megalomania. I feel like God wants me to run for president. This is before the election. I can't explain it, but I sense my country is going to need me. Something is going to happen. I know it won't be easy on me or my family, but God wants me to do it. This is a dangerous man. Anybody that says God has chosen him to lead his nation in a secular country, I mean, that's reason 147 why George W. Bush ought to be impeached.
But don't you see, you're almost proving my point. You've reverted instantly to name-calling. Instead of, I actually directly asked you for a solution, I challenge you to, you have some solutions.
No, I do have plenty of solutions. But by the way, I'm a talk show host. I'm not a politician. And talk shows are about exactly that kind of vitriol. People don't listen to Rush Limbaugh because he's a pill-popping dope addict. Well, they didn't know that till now. They don't listen to him because he has solutions. They love to hear him make fun of liberals.
Okay, that's him. That's more finger pointing.
Okay. All right.
How about some solutions in education? Really, you guys are the most conservative party lately.
What party? I don't belong to any party. I don't belong to the Green Party. I certainly don't belong to the Democratic Party. I didn't.
De facto, you do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, here's what I think. I think that mass-based popular movements have always created new definitions of America, and to me, voting for like president is maybe the last thing down the line. I mean, in terms of anybody but Bush, remove this minority president from the political landscape. But in education, I mean, listen, you don't have to be a astute politician or, what's the cliche, a rocket scientist to know that when you cut funding but expand spending on this war that drains the treasury for first for destruction and then for reconstruction, that you don't have any money left for education. I'll tell you what, once it's spent, you know, if you got a drunk profligate dad that goes and spends his paycheck on hookers and booze, and then you're going to say to me, and I'm his son, you say, well, how are you going to pay the rent? Well, you can't pay the rent. Dad just spent it all on whores and booze.
Whores and booze is your answer.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I'm saying that Bush took this country from having a surplus to making us a debtor nation, the highest debt ever a nation has ever faced in the history of the world, to benefit his rich corporate funders, and then launch this unnecessary war that rewards the people that destroyed the country of Iraq and now is going to rebuild the country of Iraq, and you and I are paying the freight.
So how would you handle Iraq? You're against the sanctions in 91.
Well,
were you
here,
against even going in Kuwait in the first place?
You know, here's the problem. Once people have made catastrophic mistakes, it's not like it's real easy to fix them. Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush made a catastrophic error in supporting Saddam Hussein and arming him. They're responsible, like so many of these guys are, for this mass bloodbath that occurred between Iraq and Iran. They encouraged the war. It was part of their tee-hee-hee. We'll get these two guys fighting one another. But primarily, they wanted to. It wasn't about the Soviet Union at all. It was about their fear of Iran. Iran that became a fear because of the catastrophic mistake of earlier U.S. government policies of supporting a Shah that was this repressive torture state that the United States saw was our great enemy. So it goes on down the line. Suddenly, our great ally, Saddam Hussein, who had all the torture chambers back when Rumsfeld was shaking his hand, he steps over the line. Well, all of a sudden, George Bush is horrified and his poll numbers are going down and he puts together this grand coalition. I don't know what the hell you do. I'm not even sure what the hell you can do now. now. They have made such awful choices. They are responsible for the deaths of so many people that, you know, what's my grand scheme for getting out? Oh, I got a great idea. Let's get more Americans killed. Let's kill more Iraqis. Let's spend more of our billions that you mentioned about education on their educational system rather than ours.
I mentioned education not for money. I mentioned it as a perfect example of a lack of ideas from the left.
There's
just a lack of ideas. Right or wrong, you know, the policies have come out on the right. They're at least progressive.
Oh, they're not progressing the size. But go. I mean, they want to privatize schools. They want to privatize school because they want everything to be a giant corporation of which people make money off of. And the main thing, and what's really insidious of why they want charter schools and stuff like that and parochial schools and vouchers, is so they can destroy the teachers union, what they see as a bulwark of the Democratic Party. It's all the most crass political crap imaginable.
I'm not here to argue the merits of any of these things. I just would love to hear some other solutions. There is a problem, education. Let's hear a solution. We are gripped in the middle of a war. I mean, there's people arming to kill us. They already have. Let's hear some solutions, okay?
Well, what about what I said? It's bad to argue by analogy because, and I always tell people, analogies work only for the people that are making them. But if Bush has driven this country into debt, if Bush has mired us in a war that never had to be fought, then you want me to think of solutions how to get him out. Why doesn't he figure out how to get his ass out of there?
But then you talk about our mistakes in the Cold War, and then you can talk about our mistakes the Europeans did in 1912. There's a domino effect going on here. It's an excuse. We need solutions, and I don't hear them on any of these leftist shows.
Well, I agree. Part of it is, I mean, when you talk about the Democrats, a scurrilous bunch, except for a few, some precious few, they have gone along with the racket for so many years, and they figure is, if they're just, you know, it's typified by a guy, you know, guys like Gebhardt and, what the hell is it? I can't even think of the guy's name, Daschle. That they figure if we're just real quiet and don't say anything, that maybe, you know, the Republicans' mistakes will catch up with them, and then we'll get to be president and run the Congress for a few years. Well, yeah, you never heard me call the Democrats people say, oh, I used to say, oh, the Democrats, yeah, that's a party that used to be active in the 20th century. And I agree with you. There has to be a grand agenda for renewal of this country, to end poverty, to make this country live up to its potential. It's nowhere near that. I mean, when you have, what was that figure early? 12 million families at risk for hunger, hundreds of thousands of kids and families going to bed hungry.
Oh, our poor people are obese.
Well, gee, so all these figures then that just say that there's kids going hungry. Well, I mean, it has to do with a bad diet. But
I agree with that.
All right. And come on, there's tens of millions of poor people in this country. That's what we have to address. And it's not going to be addressed by the senators, nor by, you know, anybody who's even going to become the Democratic president in 2004. The only time that there's been great changes made is when there's been mass movements of people, and then all of a sudden, you've seen the cheesy little bumper stickers that say, when the people lead, the leaders will follow?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Well, we're in total agreement. I agree. There needs to be mass movements of people, and with the rhetoric I hear from you and others from the left, there's no way, except for some collegeites and maybe some, you know, people living nice and safe and feeling really liberal out in the suburbs, there's no way you're going to get a mass movement of anybody until you start coming up with some ideas for all these problems you have. Because right now, the right, love them or hate them, come up with more ideas and more action, some of which work, some of which don't, and all you can do is knock everything down without any answers. So I'm going to leave it on that note.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm just looking at this email that says, this guy is clueless. All right. Well, hey, it's about solutions, and that gets... when you are marginalized by the political system and by the media, or the, you know, in the run-up to the war, it was the medium, the single voice of power, then you can bring out millions of people in the street, and there were solutions there. There were solutions. I mean, it didn't take a lot of ingenuity to understand that if there were weapons of mass destruction, which was the sole reason that George W. Bush said that they had to invade Iraq, wasn't about torture, it wasn't wasn't about September 11th. It was that that Iraq represented an imminent threat. And the anti-war movement at that time and still says today that there were no weapons of mass destruction and all that had to be allowed was a few more weeks. France wanted another month. Those cheese-eating surrender monkeys, right? They wanted another month. And instead, if that had occurred, we wouldn't have had 326 dead Americans. Pardon me. We wouldn't have a couple of thousand young men and women with their faces blown off and no legs and no intestines. Wouldn't have 7,000 dead Iraqis and 20,000 wounded Iraqis and their infrastructure reduced to rubble. Man wanted a war. You know, fascist states function like this. The supreme leader, the exalted state, which how would you say it? Which excels with expansionist wars. Okay, but Frank wanted solutions, and there are groups around. I mean, maybe I didn't finish the thought. So the anti-war movement had a thought on how to avoid war and how to make sure that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. How come I knew that? Yeah, and everybody in the anti-war movement knew that, and millions of people in the United States that weren't in the anti-war movement knew that. They knew there weren't any weapons of mass destruction, so they invade, and then they spend $200 million of our money that could have been used for schools. And they find out, gee, there's no weapons of mass destruction. Well, we're going to spend another $600 million to find out that there aren't any. Or we might find a jar of something here. That's not what Bush said. He said we're in imminent danger. Couldn't wait around for those cheese-eating surrender monkeys, right? Because we were in imminent danger. They scared the crap out of us. Right now, let's see, where's this poll? It says something about the majority of, two-thirds of the people say that the main problem with America is the economy. One-third say that it's terrorism. That's the third, again, that some of the people you can fool all the time. They're still scared crapless by the thoughts of what happened in September 11th. Not that one should think of that lightly, but having our life directed through that by the purposeful manipulation of these gangsters in Washington is more horrible than virtually anything I've ever seen in my life. I mean, there's been pretty awful deeds that have been done by politicians, Richard Nixon everybody from Johnson on up, you know. Manipulating our legitimate fears, manipulating our legitimate grief for political ends to create an empire based on war and oil, there's never been anything this hideous in American history. Okay, one final thing about solutions. When you drive people to the margins, virtually the only voice they have is on picket signs. Hey, George Bush, you know, pull out like your father should have. You know, yuck, yuck, I like that. It's pretty funny. But it doesn't substitute for legitimizing those voices of dissent, because if you legitimize those voices of dissent, if our political structure was like it is in England, where you had an energetic, combative press that told the absolute opposite side from the lies that Tony Blair was telling, this war never would have happened. It depended upon a Soviet-style compliant press. Well, now, they found out Bush lied. There was, you know, no nukes and no chemical warfare, and maybe there was faulty intelligence, and the guy that prepped Colin Powell for his lying speech in front of the United Nations says, that never should have happened. Well, this is all after the fact. This is after they have us mired in this quagmire. So our billions are being drained out of this country, hundreds of our people being killed, thousands of their people are already dead. And Frank says, well, what's your solution? Oh, well, here it is. You know, I have some friends, should I say this? Well, let me put it this way. I know people that have either used drugs or drank to the point where they have compromised their health so badly that they're going to shorten their lives tremendously. I mean, I don't know if they got a lot of years left. And if they said to me, if I said, hey, don't drink, they go, what's your solution? Yeah. Well, I don't have any solution to them. They already screwed themselves up. They can't get out of the mess that they've created physically for themselves by the misuse of their body. Well, when the body politic has been so misused by the most craven, greedy politicians in American history, and they say, well, what's your solution? It's not that easy. Yeah, I usually use this in a different regard, but it takes a second to tie a knot and an hour to untie it. All right, moving onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Evening, Peter.
Hi.
I have a couple suggestions here. You know, first, you know, for your radio talk show, when you have your guest on there.
Yeah.
You ever think of having Jeffrey Bennett on there? Now, he broadcasts on WWCR on the shortwave, and he has a show called Perspectives, and you and him talk about on the same line. You know, he's not too much happy with the way our government's going today either, who are the people that are running it. In fact, you know, he's in total agreement with you that, you know, Bush did come in second. And yeah, I agree with that, too. Bush, he was the loser. The thing is, American people are sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, they're always, and Jeffrey Bennett always says on his show, it's called Perspectives. It comes on at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then he broadcasts it again at midnight. The thing is, he says America is asleep at the wheel. He said, well, you know, they're just like sheep right now. They're being set down out through the meadow and really don't give a darn as long as everything goes the way they like it. And he says the minute the plug gets pulled, then whammo, they wonder what the heck happened.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not entirely sympathetic to that. Again, if you are divorced as an individual from any effective way to speak your mind, like sometimes people will tell me, you know, the country's going to hell and nobody's doing anything, and I impolitely say to them, what are you doing? And of course they go, well, and it's not like a trick question, or I'm trying to say that they shouldn't be complaining. I'm trying to say that the avenues from taking our complaints, making them heard by the same number of people that can hear the message that everything's okay and the leaders have the leaders in charge have complete control of everything and don't worry, just sit back and watch television and go shopping and go to work. Where is that? Where's the party of opposition? There isn't. I mean, politically, the mass movements are, imagine that. I mean, I was in New York on February 15th in this anti-war demonstration that had 1 million people at it. And still, when it's presented like this exotic fringe, this marginalized pack of weirdos that are doing the oddest thing in the world, going out and carrying signs. So the normal manner in which political discourse and political activity is carried out isn't available because there is this stranglehold by these two parties. It used to be Tweedledee and Tweedledummer. And, I mean, now, of course, with this far right-wing party in power, there is actually a modicum of difference between them. But, the Democrats just aren't adequate for doing what needs to be done.
Well, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up, too, and I don't know whether we're in agreement. I mean, this is my opinion of it. But have you noticed that Bush and this fire that happened out west here this last week, he didn't make any remarks about, geez, you know, we're going to have to do something to save these people or get them back, you know, reestablish that area. All he cares about is what goes on in Iraq. It's the same thing like when the power grid was pulled here this past summer. He was just shaking his head like, gee, that's a shame.
Yeah.
You know, and he could care less. I mean, here he was. He just flew over California, if he even flew over there. And he had very little to say about that. And, you know, I look at the majority of the American people. I mean, when I see that, I say, there's a guy that ought to be thrown out on his keister.
Well, I don't know. I mean, now that he's got his buddy in there, Arnold, I'm surprised he didn't. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. We're talking about casualties. Dave wrote into nightcall@WRIF.com. Here's a list of about 16 Michigan casualties in Iraq. Kind of hits home, dude. Yeah, it does. And actually, it is too long for me to give it to you. You can go to bayarea.com and maybe find it from there, bayarea.com. And I did. I went to there. And let me see if I can real quickly get to the top of this. List of Michigan casualties in Iraq. I mean, it's just enough to make you cry. This is from Saturday, October 25th. It's from the Mercury News. Where the hell is this? Yeah, Okay. I was thinking maybe this is from another town. Oh, a list of Michigan casualties in Iraq. This is about 16. And one of the things in these casualty lists, they talk about combat deaths. And it certainly does not recognize the injuries. Bush has not, like so many other presidents, including Clinton and his dad and Reagan, a lot of going back into Carter. When people were killed in combat, the president would meet the returning planes. Would be a president graveside ceremonies. Not Bush doesn't do this at all. They do not want to bring any attention whatsoever to what's going on. Also, the up till just recently, the wounded, the hideously wounded American casualties have been hidden from sight. Banned news media has been banned from the hospitals. These hospitals are crap that these casualties are assigned to. And it doesn't show in these lists those that were killed in accidents, from illness, from drownings, and from this disproportionately high level of suicides that are going on. So everything is... disguised under the Bush gang. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter. It's Paul out in Dearborn.
Hi, Paul.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Along the same lines as your discussion about the far right, one of the more insidious agendas of the Bush administration that is going to affect the lives of average people for a long time to come is their all-out assault on the plaintiff's bar.
What?
The Bush administration right now and the right-wing people in Congress are instituting changes in the law that will eliminate or greatly hamper the ability of plaintiffs to adjudicate in the courtrooms. You've heard about, what they refer to as...
Tort reform.
Well, tort reform and the so-called justification is the frivolous lawsuit.
Right.
You've heard this theme from them?
Sure.
Well, I was on the front page of the Detroit News back in July, and I work in auto safety.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about marginalizing people. That's the first thing they do, the big corporations, the first thing they do when you, according to their agenda, step out of line with their, their themes and their agenda. Well, let me give you an idea of a frivolous lawsuit that came from the far right.
Sure.
I was on a major TV program a number of years ago. And the excerpt of my interview lasted approximately 88 seconds. For that 88 seconds that I was on the television, I was sued by this major corporation for $82 million.
Really? Can you tell us more of the details? If it
sure.
was public? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was on ABC News 2020.
Okay.
Children were dying as a result of a defect in one of the automotive products in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was interviewed by them, and I discussed what recommendations we had made inside the company to fix the problem and get rid of the injury and death caused by the defect. And so my point being that, at one point they're saying that the justification for their tort reform is the frivolous lawsuits from coffee being spilled on a McDonald's customer down in Texas. But they do the exact same thing when it suits their agenda.
Sure.
Now, if an $82 million lawsuit against me for speaking for 88 seconds on television isn't under the classification frivolous, then what is?
What finally happened, Paul?
Obviously, after they realized what happened with juries when they heard that number and the fact that I would not be intimidated, they went into their court friends and asked for a voluntary withdrawal.
Huh.
In other words, they knew the lawsuit for $82 million was a fraud to begin with. Their judges played along with it, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is, I'm trying to be consistent with your theme,
mm-hmm.
which is, here's the far right saying they're going to fix things for you by getting rid of these crazy lawyers. But when it's their turn, they do things that are so much crazier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the so-called tort reform, I mean, for every, hot cup of coffee in grandma's lap that we roll our eyes about, there's hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands of product liability suits that are absolutely legitimate that corporations see their buddy Bush in power. And they want you and I to be held, I think it's what, to $250,000, and a lawyer would rightfully get a third of that. So you could have some crippling injury caused by a liability on the part of a corporation and wind up with like $150,000 or something, or less, actually less.
In my experience, and it's hard-won experience, I assure you, what has happened is the infiltration and the manipulation of the government agencies that are supposed to oversee whether it's safety or environmental, etc., because of the manipulation of those agencies, the only wherewithal that the common person has is the plaintiff's bar.
Mm-hmm.
So it is consistent that the far right then would make an all-out assault on the only wherewithal that the common person has. But right now, as the previous caller mentioned, the common person is asleep.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, Paul, I was just thinking about this. I was thinking of somebody I know who has a suit in against a corporation, and it looks like he's probably going to get seven figures for this egregious these egregious damages that accrued to him. Now, if you made it, say, like a maximum of a quarter of a million, you could start having these bean counters in the corporations and say, you know, we'll save more money by committing the injury and paying out, say, $250,000. Am I saying this? Yeah, right. In other words, you know what I'm saying? That the payouts would be so low that there wouldn't be any impetus for companies to watch their actions or to create the kind of products that wouldn't harm us. I mean, good. I mean, a big company does some major damage, $100 million, fine. It's all right with me. Thank you, Paul.
Right.
Appreciate it. Let's see, I was talking earlier, I think it was with Frank, I was saying just because something came, I wasn't Frank at all, it was somebody we were talking about gun control and how there was a county in which when carrying concealed weapons permits easily available came into being and then crime dropped. I said there's a Latin phrase that means just because something occurred after something, it doesn't mean the thing before it was a cause. So Aaron writes into nightcall at WRIF.com. The phrase is post hoc, ergo propter hoc. And the fallacy is fully described at, he says, Eve, sorry, I didn't mean to answer so late that it's probably been answered. No, it hasn't. Do I really want to check this out as to what the logical fallacy is? Okay, a post hoc is a fallacy with the following form. A occurs before B, therefore A is the cause of B. Okay. I mean, that's easy, right? A occurs before B, therefore A is the cause of B, which ain't necessarily so. Going on, all right, we'll take one more call and then do our spots. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. Jerry from Dearborn here.
Hi, Jerry.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Don't change a thing. Your show is so full of information that I have to listen to it more than once to assimilate all the information.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Before you say that, let me tell people that if you go to peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, you can hear archive shows by going to White Rose Society or the Global Free Press, and there's links right on the page for that. Sorry, go ahead.
So if your show is boring, every show should be that boring, okay?
Well, thank you, Jerry.
I got a couple of comments, and then I want to answer that caller about the solutions, liberal
mm-hmm.
solutions.
Right.
All right, first of all, guns, for the guy who says, you know, how you can protect my home if you take away my gun, for every one time a gun is used to protect the home, there's 15 times it's used to kill somebody either by accident or somebody losing their temper.
Right.
And there were some unanswered questions, like the flag of the UN, you were supposed to let us know on that when you went to Washington.
Oh, yeah. Somebody said the flag of the UN was flying over what?
Yeah, some guy said it. They
fly over the cap?
Flag over the Capitol,
no.
Every Capitol and every state park.
No, he said it was in every state park. No, well, the United Nations flag, I just went to the... Let me see. What is the date today? I was back the 26th was last. Yeah, I went to this anti-Bush, anti-war, anti-occupation demonstration on October 25th. My wife and I did in Washington, D.C., and someone had said there is the United Nations flag flying over the state or the national capital. Nope, not there.
Okay.
Sorry, I did forget, Jerry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
To answer, now the answers and the solutions are really, in my mind, so simple and so straightforward. I always like to say a local janitor could do a better job than Bush. In fact, the solutions, I think, are right in the arguments, right in the discussion, right in the criticisms. I mean, the war was unnecessary, just, you know, you don't go to war. As far as the Cold War, we absolutely started that. When Russia had their revolution, did we say, okay, they're free, you know, they're halfway around the world, we don't care? No, we sent troops there to try and fight, you know, counter-revolution them. We supported the white, supposedly the white Bolsheviks.
I went to communists. They were just called the whites. They were czarists and people that opposed the Bolshevik Revolution. Yeah, the United States began an attack on the Russian Revolution before it even had consolidated power.
Yeah, and the only reason we stopped is because people said we had enough war. Bring our kids home now, you know, because it was just after World War One.
You know where the major units came from? By the way, folks, in 1919, the United States invaded the fledgling Soviet Union with something called the Polar Bear Regiment that was centered in what city, Jerry?
I couldn't tell you.
Detroit.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I don't know. Remember how many deaths there are, but there's this. I can't remember the name of the cemetery, but out 75, like in Troy or Rochester, around there, there's a monument to the Polar Bear Regiment. And by the way, you hear the identical words when you read what these Detroit soldiers wrote back to their families. The people here hate us. We don't know who is the enemy. They smile at us during the day, and then they attack us during the night. It's just Vietnam and Iraq all over again.
These core issues, they never change. In fact, I'd say to these callers and the hardcore right-wingers, they fall into this category. There's that old saying, in times of extreme insanity or fear, the truth is revolutionary. And it's Voltaire.
Mm-hmm.
So here's, that's the real deal.
You're mentioning Voltaire, the great Russian what?
Philosopher.
No, I'm sorry, French. French. I'm multitasking here. That's why I can't do it. Because my favorite Voltaire quote is on my website, which says, anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. To WRIF.com. More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com. You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked with rock and roll tennis pro Luke Jensen. It wasn't long before we all start talking about his brother Murphy.
What's up with your brother? Just because he knocks up Robin Givens doesn't know it means.
Blow, man.
That was actually a cheap shot, and I'll apologize for it. Murphy did impregnate Robin Givens. That is true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Luke's
beautiful baby boy, 3 years old.
And is she now your sister-in-law?
She is. No, they are not married.
Are they together?
No, they're not together.
Ooh. Oh. Was it even close?
No. Not even close.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
That is.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's Riff.
101. WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Twice is nice.
W5.
Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's on the Riff.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche. Put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll.
At WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
I think by God Bush can't finish his job. He was aimed to take care of his dad's problems. Didn't finish that in 91. And he damn sure ain't got this sumbitch finished now.
No, no. It's going to take a long time.
I mean, you know what I'd do. Hell, I'd split that son of a bitch wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd use them bomb planes and bombs, and I'd have everybody scared to look up.
But you know, the thing of it is, after all is said and done, we still don't have Saddam Hussein. Can you believe it?
I don't know they're supposed to have his sons, but...
Oh, duh, you don't think they got his sons necessarily?
Who knows whether it's his sons or not.
Did you see the pictures of them?
Yeah, I seen the pictures of them, but all them sons bitches look alike.
He fuses access to the broadcast for those who have chosen other operating systems or browsers. So if you're not into all this, in fact, even Rick Fox is looking a little like, what? Anyways, you know, most of this stuff is not Mac friendly. Like, you cannot get on my site unless if you have a Mac, unless you have, I don't even understand all that. But we're putting up a new website soon, so everybody will be able to get on. Anyways, Terry writes in from somewhere in cyberspace. I don't know exactly where, but he is listening because he's got this long web address, how to get to it. Let's see what else. Also, James and Maria are listening in Ypsilanti, and since they're longtime listeners to our show, they're going to Eastern Michigan University. They're very involved in community activism. This is what I'm talking about, how you intervene in life. You're not just a passive receptor of what you see on the boob tube. The more you watch, the dumber you get. It's not the other way around. We've been listening to your show since our early teens, and you've been a tremendous influence on our lives. So you guys are still together since you were in your early teens? How cool. Same thing's true with my wife and I. The two of us have used your political view as arguments against the sleeping right-wing conservatives that we encounter on a regular basis. I never see them. Where are they? They don't come in my life. A couple of them here, like Meltdown. Are you listening, Meltdown? He is. He says, you always talk about me. Great disc jockey, terrible politics. He's on evenings on WRIF. All right, let me get back to the phones, because coming up at 1 a.m., people all around the world, so I should say 1 a.m. Eastern Time, here in Detroit City, Alexander Colburn, nationally syndicated columnist, talking about the book he co-edited called The Politics of Anti-Semitism. Then at about 1, actually, it's a short interview. It's only about 20 minutes. But then Peter Kornbluh talking about these recently released archives of the United States that shows the complicity in the overthrow of the democratic government of Chile and the ushering in of this fascist dictatorship, all engineered by the war criminal Henry Kissinger. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. It's Howard.
Hi, Howard.
Yeah, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about the UN flag.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't there, Howard.
Yeah, well, hey, your ADD was working that night.
You think
what I
just...
said was national parks and state capitals.
Oh, state capitals.
Yeah. Well, I was up there. It's not on our Capitol building. They've moved it across the street. It's on the Lansing City building now.
Well, I guess either they've moved their arena of control or you guys were effective. Or both.
Yeah, I don't know about that. There wasn't very many people there, unfortunately. But,
yeah.
We had some good speakers. Sheriff Richard Mack, he's running for Utah governor under a third-party banner. And he gave a really, really good speech. And I guess basically his agenda is going to be to move Big Brother out if he can and bring the, you know. Bring
little sister in. Yeah.
Yeah, state control back in. Yeah, the other thing I was going to talk about was the gun control agenda. UN's in on that deal, too. I don't know. I guess I'm bashing the UN a little bit here yet. But out in the courtyard, they've got a handgun with a twisted barrel. That shows their agenda right there.
The
UN.
Oh, the yeah. Well, it's kind of, I think they kind of mean it as like anti-war.
I think gun control. Gun control, and they can take over our country when they take our country away. It's happened time and time again throughout history. Look what happened to Jewish people in Germany. Then Russia, the whole thing. They all take the guns before they overthrow the country.
Well, they do have some utility, I have to admit. All right, Howard, thank you very much. A little earlier, we had a caller, Barry, was talking about how these hybrid cars, because they have all these batteries, are bad for you. And that he used this Gauss meter. And Peter from Tecumseh wrote into nightcall@wrf.com. He says, your caller makes an interesting point. He spelled wrong, though. He's talking about G-A-U-S-S, not G-O-S-S. It's a measure of magnetic force. Those hybrid cars have a double floor with their batteries stored in between. You are effectively sitting on top of the batteries, and there are lots of them. The amount of electricity flowing between the batteries and the electric motor would generate quite a strong magnetic field. It's hard to say what sort of effect this would have on the body. I have heard of people throwing out their electric blankets because of similar health complaints. The same principle would apply. I don't know. You know, all of my ecologically conscious friends say that's what they want to get. Let me see. The sanity of your show. I bet you he's going to say we're... Oh, no. This is actually the people's... I thought someone was going to say I was insane. Man, there's so many... this website sucks. Maybe I ought to go back to my old one. Jeff from Los Angeles here. Happy to be getting you tonight on the web, as usual. And by the way, I, too, have been listening to you since I was a young teenager. I'm now 33. Just wanted to correct you on something. I run a Mac, and I can get your website just fine. So no worries there. Keep up the good work. I don't get it, man. You know. I mean, there's stuff on my website right now. If you go down to it, it's from the Toledo Blade, Buried Secrets, Brutal Something, a Blade Investigation, Tiger Force, an elite fighting unit in Vietnam, and then it's the last third of it's cut off when you're looking at it on the screen. And I look on it, you know, where you form it on something called, what is it, Microsoft Front Page, and it's all there. I don't understand this stuff. Oh, well, where are we going? Line four. All right, let's do this, since I actually have a little short interview. How many more callers do we have waiting? Okay, we'll do all of them, so hang on if you're there. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. I was just curious, I didn't hear the beginning of your show, if you made any comments or any thoughts about Jerry Oliver's resignation.
You know, I have been so unfocused on Detroit politics, but Jerry Oliver, the Detroit police chief, resigned. And did it have to do directly with that moron went on, tried to get on a plane packing heat?
From what I understand, yes.
Wow.
That's the major reason.
Must have been more to it than that. But
they're very well made. That's all anybody's heard, though.
Wow. What? Any thoughts on it?
Well, I'm a Detroit police officer. I'm thrilled. And so is pretty much all the department.
Oh, so in other words, he wasn't real popular among the men.
No, no, not at all.
Usually chiefs aren't.
Well, that's true. That is true. But he was to an extreme. There was this, like, among all the troops for him. There was an extreme hate of the man, to be honest with you.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. What, they got anybody in mind?
I'm guessing they're tossing a couple names around. We have, for some ungodly reason, we have 3 assistant chiefs and 7 deputy chiefs. I don't know why we would need that many. So they've got...
They have to command, the mayor's security guard, probably, because there's so many of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I usually listen to your show on my way home from work on Sunday nights, and like I said, I missed the beginning. And you're right, you've been pretty much talking about Iraq for the past couple months, and I didn't know if you had any thoughts on it.
Well, I appreciate it. One of the ways you can get me off my monomaniacal fixation on this, which I don't know why I'm mocking myself, because I do think it's important, is, and I appreciate it. I'm sorry in many ways. In fact, I'm not in many ways. I'm sorry, period, that you weren't able to get in earlier. And it's kind of issues that I always tell people, if they don't like what I'm talking about, bring up something else. We'll talk about that. So I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you so.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. More email. This is from Jeff. Says, really, and he wrote into call, nightcall at WRF.com. Really dig your show. Just skimming through one of my favorite parts of Harper's Weekly, the Harper Index, which is really cool. Thought you might be interested in this. The percentage of Americans who will save less than $100 on their 2006 federal taxes as a result of this year's tax cut, 88. What? Yeah, percentage of Americans. Oh, 88%. Oh, I got it. 88% of Americans will save less than $100 on their 2006 federal taxes as a result of this year's tax cuts. So this is what I'm saying. The tax cut that Bush put in was a major fraud. Average amount these Americans will save, $4. All right. Number of U.S. troops who have died in Afghanistan and Iraq in the past 2 years, 354. Number who died in Vietnam in 1963 and 1964, 324. Very interesting. From the October 2003 issue of Harper's. Another call, Mr. Fox. Thank you. Why don't you busy that other line out, though, so we can not leave anybody stranded. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, Pete, what's up?
Oh, just finishing off this show, so go ahead.
I just wanted to say that, I don't know, why aren't we as people looking at the bigger picture in life and worried about stupid stuff? And,
like what?
I mean, it's like material things and just hanging out, watching TV instead of, worried about the human race and stuff.
Well, I agree. And that's in many ways what this show is all about. So with that suggestion, I will say thank you because we're right near the end of our show. And is that it for our callers? Thank you, Rick Fox, who will be on following our interviews at about 2 o'clock. Apparently, all these Mac listeners are writing in and saying, yes, you can listen on a Mac, and you can either listen to the archived version. Thank you, Ben, and thank you for your work in archiving this, at whiterosesociety.org, whiterosesociety.org, or you can open the Mac version of Windows Media Player and enter the following URL, which is way too long to... for me to tell you. But one of the things, Ben, why don't you email me, and tomorrow I'll look at it, and you can tell me how I can put it on my site. I mean, just put it on there, and it's whole length. Anyways, wonderful show tonight, not because of me, but because of you. Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for the interviews. I think you're going to like them.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, man. That was it already. See, now you know it was recorded. Press the wrong button. Hear the commercials? That pays my salary, so stay tuned.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-L-O-A-N, then the number 1.
Have you ever had a bad experience at the dentist? A lot of people are afraid of the dentist. Others just don't have the time. Then when they finally do go, there's a lot of work to be done, and it makes them even more afraid or embarrassed. Hi, I'm Dr. A. Krishanowitz. With Sedation Dentistry, we can make it easier for you to have years' worth of damage repaired in just a few visits. It is simple, and regardless of how many years of neglect you've been through because of fear or lack of time, we will help you achieve healthy teeth and gums for a lifetime. You put off going to the dentist long enough. Don't wait any longer. What I'd like you to do right now is call 586-247-0010. That's 586-247-0010. Or visit us on the web at mydentistry.com. We've changed people's lives. We can do the same for you. No matter how long you've waited because of fear or lack of time, we will help you. You thought about doing it. This is your opportunity. Call now, 586-247-0010, and receive your initial exam and x-rays for only $19.
Hi, this is Julie from the Vermont Teddy Bear Company. If you're looking for a fun and memorable gift for a birthday, new baby, or to wish someone well, sending an authentic Vermont teddy bear is perfect. Vermont teddy bears are handmade right here in the mountains of Vermont by people who love teddy bears, and we'll personalize a bear just for your loved one. We'll even help you write the perfect message on your card, add some gourmet caramels, and make sure it gets delivered on time anywhere in the country. And it's so simple. All you have to do is call a friendly bear counselor like me at 1-800-829-BEAR. We'll help you choose from over 100 great bears, like the new baby bear with the baby's name and birth date embroidered right on the bib. It's a creative alternative to flowers and will be enjoyed forever because Vermont teddy bears are guaranteed for life. Overnight and Saturday delivery is guaranteed. So call today at 1-800-829-BEAR or shop online at VermontTeddyBear.com. Show you care, send a bear for any occasion. That's 1-800-829-BEAR.
I know, it's a serious habit. It's more than just an addiction to nicotine. But when I quit smoking, I needed something to do with my hands, or something to keep me busy. If you think about it, smoking is a lifestyle, and if you want to quit, you have to change how you do things. You have to think of yourself as a non-smoker. That's not easy. Some people can just quit cold turkey, and that's that. Well, that didn't work for me. I needed some help, some guidance. I got that from the Smoker's Quit Kit. It's free. It's for people who really want to quit smoking. Call 1-800-537-5666 to get one. It deals with the habit of smoking, not just the physical addiction. Look, it was my best friend when I was quitting. It even has some coupons for products that can almost double your chances of quitting for good. You've probably tried a lot of things. Try this. Call 1-800-537-5666 for your free quit kit today. Every cigarette is hurting you.
A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
Getting ready to talk to your daughter about underage drinking? Then make sure you avoid the following communication violations.
Hey, Carrie, let's you and I go get our belly buttons pierced. What do you say?
Trying to be cool. For more effective communication, just be yourself.
Carrie, honey, we need to talk about global warming.
Straying from the subject at hand. Just be open, honest, and direct. She'll appreciate it.
Now it's time for some role-playing. Granddad's going to play the part of your friend Jessica.
Let's go shopping for lip gloss.
Turning the conversation into a major production. For more effective communication, keep it simple. Want more tips? Then check out the free Family Talk About Drinking guide. Just call 1-800-359-TALK or visit FamilyTalkOnline.com. We all make a difference. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werbe, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. Racism, that ugly human prejudice that has done so much damage to the world, to our community, so toxic to life, exists in any number of virulent forms. One of the worst, of course, because of its results, is anti-Semitism. It resulted in millions of European Jews being exterminated during World War II. I think we all know this. Anti-Semitism is still with us, but I'd like to bring someone to our microphone who's been a guest in the past, in fact, an old friend, who has co-edited a book called The Politics of Anti-Semitism, and it's not what you think. But the editors are Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair. Alexander Coburn joins me from California. Alex, welcome once again to the Peter Werby Show.
Good to be with you again, Peter.
Well, I know you're up against time, so we will dispense with pleasantries and talk about the politics of anti-Semitism. This is not what you think. Tell us the subject matter of your book.
Well, the kickoff point for the book is, which stems certainly from my personal experience and from the personal experiences of a number of the contributors, is that if you're critical of what Israel's doing to Palestinians or of policies of an Israeli government, fairly soon on, if you you might well get called an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
And the allegation is that if you're critical of actually existing and performing Zionism, that's the same as being anti-Semitic. And after many years of enduring this kind of stuff, and having seen this weapon increasingly brandished as a worse and worse the behavior of the Sharon government, as many previous governments, Jeffrey and I thought that we run a number of pieces on this theme on our website, and we thought it was time just to put them into a book. And this is the result.
Well, and I should say also that it's published jointly by Counterpunch. It's a wonderful print newsletter. It's also available counterpunch.org and simultaneously by AK Press, akpress.org as well. Now, you have an essay in there called My Life as an Anti-Semite. And
my life has a, quote, anti-Semite, unquote, please.
All right. That's very important because, what oftentimes, particularly, let's just stick to this country or maybe England as well. Anti-Semitism, as I said, is this virulent prejudice against Jews, and anti-Semitism still exists. I mean, there are people
we have an essay in the book. The first essay is by Michael Newman. He says, what is anti-Semitism? Very brilliant essay. And the second essay is by Scott Handelman. And he says, yes, sure, there is a horrible thing called anti-Semitism historically. You know, in the Middle Ages, they were saying Jews, you know, killed Christians and drank their baby's blood. And in the 19th century, said all Jews were money bag bankers ripping off the poor and so forth. And, you know, anti-Semitism exploded finally in the horrors of the Final Solution, the Nazis murdering 6 million Jews. We say that, yes, that is true. And Scott says in his essay, you know, anti-Semitism is a horrible, vast, a phenomenon anchored in history. There is not an eternal gene, I don't believe, personally, that is anchored in every human called anti-Semitism or in a number of humans. It arose for specific reasons in the 19th century and in the 20th century. And certainly in this country, and I believe in Europe too, anti-Semitism is on the decline. And sometimes the Anti-Defamation League is driven to comical lengths to try and maintain the, I believe, fiction that anti-Semitism is on the increase. If you go out and paint 6 swastikas on a wall, they will cite those as 6 separate incidents of anti-Semitism.
Hmm.
There are, of course, anti-Semites in the United States. Is anti-Semitism as potent a force as it was a generation ago? Absolutely not. A generation ago, you had signs on the beaches in Florida saying, no dogs, no Jews. You don't have that. We have Senator Lieberman, whom I think is an appalling politician, but he was a heartbeat away from potentially being president as Al Gore's running mate. He's an Orthodox Jew. It's very hard to claim that anti-Semitism is a waxing force. In Europe, people go on about anti-Semitism in France. There is anti-Semitism in France. It's mostly directed against Arabs. The fastest growing Jewish community in Europe is in Germany. So that's one side of the story. And we say now, there is a lot of invoking of anti-Semitism which is completely baseless, has no reason, and actually what it's a way to try and deflect entirely merited criticism of what Israel's been doing to Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Irving Howe, the Jewish intellectual who founded Dissent magazine, one time famously, and I suspect inaccurately, said, even in the warmest heart, there's a cold spot for the Jews. So there's often a suspicion that even anti-Israel criticism really masks a dislike of Jewish people.
It's one of those I think that's all bull, you know. I mean, I've been around on the American, you know, every now and again, you know, the American. By the way, I was called an anti-Semite by Eric Alterman for criticizing Irving Howe, since we're at it. And then I called Alan Dershowitz a plagiarist, which he is, in his book, The Case for Israel. He stole footnotes from another fantasist, Joan Peters. And what did he do? He called me an anti-Semite. Hmm. It's becoming like a flit gun. It's no longer like the launching of a very, very serious accusation of Jew hatred. It's just something, if you say anything about someone they don't like the look of, they call you an anti-Semite. It's preposterous. And I think, by the way, I've spent a very many, many years on the American left. I do not think the American left is suffused with anti-Semitism. I think there's almost no anti-Semitism on the American left that I've been able to detect. I don't know what you think.
Well, I think not either.
I think it's all hooey.
My guest is Alexander Coburn, co-editor of The Politics of Anti-Semitism, along with his partner Jeffrey St. Clair, who's written several books together. One of the things, of course, I think that it's curious to probably, 95% of the Americans who are Gentiles, is they're not always aware of who's who. I heard a Jewish friend of mine one time said, the only people that know who Jews are other Jews and Nazis. And to some extent, that's the only people that care. So is this a dispute that really only involves a small circle of friends, or does it have some important ramifications?
Well, I think the important ramifications are, and this is and there are other aspects of this book I should bring in at this point, that insofar as we are miles and miles from any sort of just solution in the Middle East, you have to look at why what is really happening in Israel and why the real political options are not examined in this country and, in fact, are sedulously avoided. Why is it that almost no politician in the United States, in the U.S. Congress, will dare to put their heads up and say the Sharon government is acting in a horrifying manner towards Palestinians and taking us further and further from the possibility of any real solution? Why? Because there is a very, very powerful lobby for Israel in this country. I mean, it's just been demonstrated time and again. You only look at what happens to politicians who do speak out a little bit, going from Senator Charles Percy to McCloskey, and in recent times, of course, you had Hilliard of Alabama, the first black congressman elected there since Reconstruction. You had McKinney of Georgia, both hounded out of the Congress in part or in large measure owing to the activities of Jewish money and of pro-Israeli groups. There's no question about it.
That's had
a very chilling effect.
But as soon as you say Jewish money or the undue power of the Israel lobby, then people suspect here comes the anti-Semitism.
It's all crap. You've just said it. I don't know why you said that. Everybody knows that there's a very powerful pro-Israel lobby in this country. I mean, you have to be blind not to notice it. Every U.S. politician knows exactly the power of AIPAC. When AIPAC holds its national conference, the White House always sends someone along to deal with it. I mean, there are lobbies in this country. You can identify them. We know how much money they give politicians. You can see what the cause and effect are. This book states that simply. To say that's verging on anti-Semitism is completely insane. That's one of the reasons we did our book, by the way.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm trying to elicit exactly what you're telling us, Alexander Coburn. Now, some of these have the titles, and I just received the book, so I didn't get a chance to look at all of them. Robert Fisk, the wonderful British journalist, wrote a piece, Why Does John Malkovich Want to Kill Me?
John Malkovich in the Cambridge Union in England said he thought that Robert Fisk should be shot. That's a pretty heavy thing to say, particularly someone like Robert Fisk, who is constantly in very dangerous situations and was indeed nearly murdered by Afghans in a village because they saw him as a gringo or as a guy who might have contributed to the bombs that had recently decimated the family of one of the people there. And the Wall Street Journal gave a very loud cheer and said he had it coming to him. Absolutely amazing. And Fisk, in this essay, quotes some of the letters he gets. I've had similar letters. I can't say they bother me very much. From people when you're seen as a critic of Israel, you get absolutely amazing hate mail.
Mm-hmm. Now, is John Malkovich Jewish? I know, that's what I mean. I had no idea.
I never asked myself the question. I don't go to the movies very much. I barely know who John Malkovich is, thank God. But, and there's essays in here by Saeed, talking about, what a just solution of Palestine is, which is extreme and has a very humane, an inclusive vision of, you know, what a one-state Israel-Palestine might be.
Now, when I look through the contents of the politics of anti-Semitism, I see names that appear to me to be on the face of them Jewish last names. So am I correct? There's sort of a mix of...
Half the contributors in the book are Jewish and half of them aren't.
Was this done... Did you do
that? No, actually, at the end of the day, I out of curiosity, I just added up who was Jewish and who wasn't, and lo and behold... It came out as half and half.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, to come out 9.5 or 9.7, I mean, I wouldn't have been particularly surprised. But actually, it was rather pleasant to find that that's the way to come out.
So there was no intent?
No, none at all.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we wanted people from Israel, like Yuri Avneri, a former member of the Knesset, you know, 80 years old, a marvelous commentator. We had Yigal Bronner, who's a terrific guy in Israel. And, of course, we had Edward Said, and we have a very good essay by Shahid Ahlam. You know, then we have Norman Finkelstein and Jeffrey Blankfurt, and then we have Kathy and Bill Christensen, who are former CIA analysts, and they have a pretty good essay, actually about the lobby that pushed for the war in Iraq. So we go at the whole issue from a number of points of view.
Now, when people level criticisms of Israeli government policy towards the Palestinians, I have to say, I've never seen anything that goes beyond what is said in Israel itself by groups critical of the government there.
I mean, you're saying a very true word there. If you want to see really vigorous, incredibly well-informed, on the ground, a criticism of policies not just of the Sharon government, but of Labour governments, you know, you could just open the pages of or look on the web at the English language edition of Haaretz. I mean, Gideon Levy, one of the greatest reporters in the world today, does incredible stories in there. I mean, in the years before you could get Haaretz in English, the late Israel Shahak used to send to those people in the States he knew, he used to send translations from the Israeli press. And I must have said this 1,000 times. You know, if you want to see proper reporting of the issues, go to the Hebrew language press. Not so much the English language press.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, the... what's the main English language paper over there? It's gone out of my head for a moment. That's owned by, you know, absolutely fanatical Zionist based in Canada, Conrad Black, the Jerusalem Post.
Okay. Now, when you're a nationally syndicated columnist, I read your column every week in the Nation magazine, and as you've said, you've been charged with being anti-Semitic because of your criticism of Israeli government policy. Has there ever been efforts to stop you from being printed?
Oh yeah, well, the Village Voice. Sure. I mean, they treated me so badly, I resigned. The guy had a grant from an Arab American organization that said that was equivalent to being paid by the Sheikh of Araby or whatever it was, and I thought they behaved so badly, I pissed off and went to the Nation. Well, I'm very glad I did, because then I've been on the Nation for years. But every now and again, like, for example, the New Republic launched an attack on me last year.
Mm-hmm.
And... it was complete. I mean, it's actually, I tell the story at some length in my essay. They said I'd written something anti-Semitic because I quoted stories in after 9/11, which discussed, you know, the arrest of Israeli agents in this country. It was fairly widely reported, actually, on Fox News, apart from other things. This guy said he actually didn't look up the files properly. He said no one's written this stuff up, and therefore Alex Coben is using mere wild rumor and speculation, and that must mean he's an anti-Semite. And then he promptly called up Katrina Vandenhuvel, of the editor of The Nation, and said, why wasn't I being fired as an anti-Semite? And Katrina Vandenhuvel issued a totally chicken shit statement saying that, you know, she never read anything I wrote in Counterpunch, and anyway, The Nation didn't make its contributors, you know, she distanced herself totally. I thought very cowardly manner, actually. So every now and again, people try and do me in, but, I mean, I've been around for a long time, and, you know, I can stand up for myself, and this book is in part a response to that kind of libel.
You actually can. Every once in a while, Alexander Coburn, I have to say, I read some long letter by a prestigious person you've been critical of, and I go, oh, no, I think they've got Alex this time. And then comes the rejoinder. There comes Alexander Coburn replies, and I go, whoa. So
there you go. You see, you're hanging up, and you think they've got him. And then suddenly, you know, with one tremendous bound, the enemy is confounded a bit.
Well,
I used to do that a lot in the 80s, you know, but The Nation doesn't really like that stuff much anymore.
In a way, this is a repeat of what we were talking about earlier, but maybe I should have mentioned it that time. One of there's two charges. If you're a Gentile such as yourself, the charge is anti-Semitism. If you're Jewish, as half of the authors are of the essays in the politics of anti-Semitism, then you're a self-hating Jew.
Yeah. I mean, actually, one of the most interesting essays kind of on that theme is by Norman Finkelstein, who, you know, who did the Holocaust Industry book a couple of years ago for Verso. And he has a very interesting essay about going to Germany and the kind of attacks he put up with. I mean, Norman's parents are both survivors of concentration camps. I think he lost his parents actually quite recently. And he writes about how, so to speak, cost-free anti-Semitism by Germans, people railing away about anti-Semitism, but not in any way that costs them any real effort or exposure. Whereas he said, you know, if they really wanted to do some good in the world, they would actually have some words to say about what Israel's doing to Palestinians. But he says, he has some interesting remarks about how extreme philo-Semitism is, in a way, the mirror image of anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. such as some of these German intellectuals pretend to. It's a sort of complicated thesis, but I think he works it out pretty well.
Well, is it successful? I mean, does charges of anti-Semitism quiet people? It certainly doesn't quiet you. It certainly doesn't seem to quiet Norman Finkelstein, nor...
Oh, no. One of the themes of the book, first of all, the behavior... The Labour governments of Israel used to handle these things better. They were more dexterous at propaganda. I think the Sharon government just doesn't care. I mean, you know, they really don't care. And I think it is having, if there's a real contributor to rise of anti-Semitism in the world today, I don't think it is rising, but, you know, maybe in some areas, it is because of the policies of the Israeli government. In the same way that, you know, Israel, which is conceived of as a sanctuary for Jews from persecution, has probably become the most dangerous place in the world for Jews to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many ironies in this story.
Now, every once in a while, though, you have people making, I mean, oftentimes they're conservative Republicans, but sometimes they turn out to be this fellow from the New Republic or the Prime Minister of Malaysia. So the fact that there is public expression of anti-Semitism...
Well, let's look at the Malaysia thing for a minute. I mean, I think he said some things which were anti-Semitic, but I mean, let's look at that. What did he say? He said, first of all, 6 million Jews died in the gas oven. I mean, so he's not a Holocaust denier, right?
Right.
Then he said, you know, the Jews are incredibly smart and successful people. Then he said that we, the Muslims, 1.3 billion Muslims, ought to look at these incredibly smart and intelligent people and learn from them. That the way is not terrorism, it's not fundamentalism, it's actually using your brain. Then he said, of course, the Jews get others to do their fighting and dying for them. And that is probably an anti-Semitic remark. Although it has to be said that earlier this year, people kept talking about the pro-Israel lobby inside the administration. People like Pearl and what's the guy?
Wolfowitz.
Yeah, they called them chicken hawks. Mm-hmm. In other words, they kept saying they were people who were supporters of Israel who got others to do their fighting and dying for them. So it's not exactly a novel charge. But I thought, by and large, I mean, the absolute uproar about Mahathir's remarks was a little odd.
Well, you know, in one hand, though, it's a wash as well, because you'll have right-wing, pro-Israel, Zionist Jews, American Jews, in the administration. And on the other hand, the anti-war progressive movement is equally filled with Jewish Americans. So,
yeah, I mean, I always love when they say the left is anti-Semitic in America. As you well know, you know, huge sections of the American left are Jews. It's always been true.
So, all right, I mean, the book, The Politics of Anti-Semitism, it sort of lays out the problem, by laying out the problem and exposing it in a sense that suggests a solution, that we ought to deal with these issues, you know, on the basis of the issues themselves, and not whenever there's a criticism, start suspecting that, you know, that there's one has a whiff of the gas chambers.
Absolutely, you got it. I hope people get the book. You can tell them how to get it?
You go ahead. It's easier for you.
Anyone who wants to get the book and they can't get it at whatever splendid local independent bookstore they patronize, they can ring up Counterpunch at 1-800-840-3683. That's 1-800-840-3683, and give a credit card number to our fine business manager, Becky Grant. Costs you, I think it's about... around $11, you get a bit of a discount from the list price. Or you can go on our website and just buy it through the website.
Mm-hmm, which is counterpunch.org. And it also has daily postings. And sometimes people say, where do you find out all your information? I don't have secret sources. I've got a few of them. Counterpunch.org is one of them. Also, you did it jointly with AK Press, which is AK Press.
Fine bunch of anarchists, and I like them a lot. They're based in Oakland. They put out really nice books themselves, actually, too. I mean, they've got a wonderful series of old anarchist classics and other stuff, and we're very happy to be in association with them.
Well, Alexander Coburn, I know you have to go. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. We actually haven't talked in a couple of years on the air.
Wait by the phone. I wait. I sigh. I look at your photograph occasionally. That's all we need.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Peter.
Appreciate it.
See ya.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. Get your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com. More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Carrera's Cucina Italiana Restaurant on Telegraph Road in Dearborn Heights.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche. Put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF. Com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were looking at that new Girls Gone Wild video, and a few observations were made.
The producer is hilarious. You hear in this one more than what I'm used to. You hear the producer's voice on, hey, let's see your ass. Yeah, turn. Oh, man, is that hot.
Yeah.
They encourage him like the creepiest porno guy.
Yeah.
And then when if they show their ass, which they usually do, he goes, yeah, let's see the kitty cat.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
You're taking a line from Ike?
Yep.
Oh, man.
And then if there's two girls, be like, yeah, why don't you guys make out? And they start making out. Go, yeah, why don't you take the top off and make out again?
Oh.
And they just push him like step by step by step.
Take him right through it.
And he always asks them how old they are. And when they go, 18, you hear the production crew go, whoa! And the guy goes, 18. The younger the age is, the more creepy the guy sounds.
Sounds like us.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
No.
It's the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff Rock and Roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown at WRIF.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
He's in the
101. WRIF.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Kicker's All-American Grill on Plymouth Road in Livonia. You can purchase
purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on to three of the most catastrophic domestic attack on the United States, and it etched in our memories. What missing there? It was also the anniversary of another catastrophic event, September 11th, 1973, if I'm correct on that date. And I'll bring our guest in to make sure I got the right year. Yes, that's right. It's the 30th anniversary of the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Chile. And why this is an event worth examining so many years after is something we will take up as well. Joining me is Peter Kornbluh. He's been a guest on the Peter Werby Show before. And Peter Kornbluh is the director of the National Security Archives Chile Documentation Project. And it is a not-for-profit research library of declassified U.S. government documentation at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. And a great number of new documents have become available to researchers. And Peter Kornbluh has diligently gone through them and published a new book, The Pinochet File, a Declassified Dossier on Atrocity and Accountability. Peter Kornbluh, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back, Peter.
Yeah, and how many documents were released about the United States' role in this fascist revolt against a democratically elected government?
24,000 never-before-seen documents, including top-secret CIA, cable traffic, White House memoranda, transcripts of President Richard Nixon's meetings with Henry Kissinger, even transcripts of Kissinger's meeting with Augusto Pinochet in Chile. Really a treasure trove of secret documents that shed tremendous light on the U.S. role in Chile between 1970 and 1990.
Now, why were these documents, maybe you could explain the whole process of documents that are not available to us as citizens and the importance of having full, transparent information about our attitudes towards foreign policy and war and what have you.
Well, I think the American public right now is getting a real taste of the issue of secrecy because the Bush administration is withholding documents from the commission that is investigating the attack on the United States on 9/11/2001. And that commission wants documents that were given to President Bush in the summer of 2001, and so far the White House has refused to turn those over. And that's just an example of how we can't really know what our government knew, what our government did, why it did what it did, without having access to internal information. And historical information is particularly important. We really can't have an informed debate over the future of our foreign policy unless we know what in truth our past foreign policy was, and that foreign policy is recorded in literally tens of thousands, millions of pages of documents generated by government agencies from the White House to the CIA to the Defense Department to the State Department, and it's our right to know what was done in our name, but often without our knowledge. In the case of Chile 30 years ago, which kind of remains a kind of a scandal of the U.S. past, It is particularly interesting to obtain these documents, review them, and see what they say about U.S. conduct in the past and what lessons we can learn for the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, I suspect there are people listening that were 40 years old in 1973, and there are other people listening that weren't even born by 20 years. So take us back to September 11th, 1973, and remind us of the event that occurred. I mean, I sketched the broad outline of it. A democratically elected government was overthrown. But a little more detail, if you would.
Let me just take you back 33 years ago to September 4th, 1970. Salvador Allende, a doctor, a senator in Chile, a very well-known local politician, is narrowly elected in Chile to be president. He becomes the first democratically elected socialist. Leader in the world. 11 days later, weeks before he's actually inaugurated, in what was seen as a preemptive strike, The President of the United States, Richard Nixon, in a meeting with Henry Kissinger and the CIA Director, Richard Helms, ordered the CIA to make the economy scream in Chile, to undermine Allende, try and prevent him from even becoming president, from even being inaugurated, from being sworn in. The initial efforts to block his inauguration through covert operations failed. Then for 3 years, the CIA, under Nixon's orders and Kissinger's supervision, conducted a destabilization campaign, which contributed to significant turmoil in Chile. 30 years ago, on 9/11/73, Augusto Pinochet, knowing that he had U.S. support, led the Chilean military in a violent coup that overthrew Allende and cost him his life. Many Chileans thought that the Chilean military would simply return rule to the civilians after the coup and after Allende's death. But in fact, Pinochet became a dictator for 17 years. He became, I think, the single most infamous Latin American dictator in the last 30 or 40 years.
In your book, Peter Kornbluh, The Pinochet File, the subtitle is A Declassified Dossier on Atrocity, and many of us know that there were terrible atrocities, vast human rights violations carried out by the Pinochet regime there. And accountability, what sort of role, you already mentioned, attempted destabilizing the Allende the government, even before it became, it took over the reins of leadership, but what direct role did, if any, did the United States play, given all these documents you've seen, in the direct overthrow, or in the overthrow directly?
Well, the United States played a direct role in creating what CIA documents refer to as a coup climate.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the weather here, Peter. We're talking about an atmosphere of violence, of economic deprivation, of social turmoil, and military agitation. And the CIA was directly involved in all of those things. The President of the United States, Richard Nixon, personally authorized millions of dollars to be funneled into Chile's leading opposition newspaper, which became the bullhorn for kind of calling Chilean citizens to arms against the Allende government. The agency worked closely with the Chilean military, passed the message to Pinochet's people that the United States would support a coup. The CIA, from the declassified documents, does not appear to have played a direct role in the coup itself, because they determined pretty early on that if the Chilean military wanted to do this, they could accomplish this without direct outside support. But literally in the hours after the coup, secret messages started to go to Pinochet from the United States saying, we support what you're doing, we're going to give you all appropriate assistance. And that was the kind of second scandal. Not only did we covertly undermine democracy in Chile, but then we rather baldly supported the advent of a bloody military dictatorship. And as the rest of the world quickly condemned Pinochet for his human rights atrocities, for 3 years during kind of Kissinger and Gerald Ford era, the United States continued to support Augusto Pinochet. In fact, until the day that he sent his own terrorist to Washington, D.C., and planted a bomb under the car of one of his leading critics here, Orlando Letelier, taking Letelier's life and the life of a 25-year-old New Jersey woman named Ronnie Carpen Moffat.
Now, on the cover of your book, The Pinochet File, it has a quote from Samantha Power, who has written the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, A Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide. She said, the smoking guns are all here. I heard, actually, an FBI agent on a nationally syndicated program in which you were on, and he said a couple of things. He said, A, the smoking guns really weren't there, and B, he denies, and then the second thing he sort of defended. He said, we were in a battle against international communism. We were fighting, in Southeast Asia, and you can't judge what the United States did in terms of its foreign policy by today's standards. How do you react to both those?
That was actually a CIA official.
You're right. Sorry. CIA,
named John right. Devine, who had been in the CIA station as a young man in Chile. He was involved in a number of covert operations, including covert propaganda and media operations in Chile. And his position basically was that the world was different then, and the United States did not really participate in the coup. The CIA's own documents, which I republish in the book, that's one of the things that's important about this book, is not only a narrative history, but it also has the actual documents in it, a selection of CIA cables, of White House transcripts and memos. You can read for yourself the CIA documents, in which the CIA itself takes credit for helping to set the foundation for the coup of 11 September 1973. And that particular document is one of the smoking guns, and there are many, many others, including the documents that show CIA reports on Pinochet's human rights atrocities, Kissinger's directions to his staff to support Pinochet no matter what, the documents that show that the CIA knew about the missions that were being planned out of Chile and other Southern Cone secret police terrorism missions around the world, did not inform the State Department, did not take steps to deter these attacks, which eventually led to the assassination of Orlando Letelier. Those documents are all there. People can read them for themselves and see if they are smoking guns or not.
Now, one of the things that that marks a democratic society is the ability to have a public a discourse and a full information about the subjects that we're dealing with. Yet we find out about these things typically 30 years later. So we find out, of course, that the Bay of Tonkin incident and the resolution that followed, set the stage for massive U.S. intervention in Vietnam. Then it comes to find out there was no attack on American ships, and here's information as well. I mean, people charged at the time that the CIA was behind this coup, and there was no way to document it. It was just sort of a charge. So that's what I tell people now. I said, you know, don't make up your mind about anything about September 11th or Iraq or invasion of Afghanistan or any of this, because we're going to find out in 3 years or 5 years or 30 years that the reverse of what you thought is correct. In some ways, it's more of a statement. I mean, for all the wonderful work and the hard, diligent work that's gone into this book, it's what we needed 30 years ago, right?
It would have been nice to have these documents much, much earlier, that's for sure. And there's really no reason why the American public should not have had access to these materials sooner, except that the U.S. government tends to be dominated by those we call securocrats, those who like to keep the secrets rather than sharing this information. And it takes a real public demand, a real public assertion of our own right to know in order to eventually get these documents released. Chile became a case study, by the way, of mendacity, of lying in the executive branch to the Congress, to the press, and to the American public. And Chile was the first case of a CIA director, Richard Helms, being found guilty of perjury to Congress and being forced to plead no contest to misleading Congress. Of course, he was only fined $2,000 for this criminal act.
I'm sure he's wealthy by now.
And got away with it. Yeah. But Chile reminds us that our government has misled us in the past, and I think as a case study, it creates a healthy skepticism about some of the statements that are coming out of the executive branch in recent times. And we are now seeking documents today in Washington, D.C. to clarify what the veracity of the statements that have been made by the president and his aides about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, et cetera.
Mm-hmm, but
and, I think when we finally get those documents declassified, hopefully before 30 years go by, there'll be a somewhat different picture than was presented to us as a lead up to the war in Iraq.
Well, that's what's disturbing to me, and I guess that's what I meant by that kind of convoluted statement, was that what we need them now in order to make decisions about what we were told as a nation and what was true and what was fabricated. And, I mean, I know please don't take this as a criticism. I know you're working as hard and fast as you can, and what's really here is what you call the securocrats. That's the problem, because I don't think these people could function in a transparent government. Do you?
Well, transparency and accountability is what is the main pillar of our democracy, of our democratic system. That's what really sets the United States apart from all other countries. We don't want to be a secretive, furtive government. We don't want to be like the Kremlin in Moscow during the Cold War. We don't have a dictatorship in this country. We have a a democracy, elected leaders, and the leaders that are supposed to be accountable to the public. But they can't be really accountable unless the public has access to the truth. That is difficult. Chile is a case which reminds us of the type of activities that get conducted in our name but without our knowledge. I think it is another kind of warning that we got to be vigilant in keeping the fire to the feet of our elected leaders to give us the information so that we can decide the truth of what's being told to us.
The book is The Pinochet File, a declassified dossier on atrocity and accountability. It's a National Security Archive book by Peter Kornblum, my guest. It's published by the New Press, and there are a series of exposés like this available on the website of the National Security Archive, and it's probably a little hard to get, although, Peter Kornblum, you can give it, and I will have it on my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. I was so impressed with the site, I went there today that I put it on as my featured website.
Excellent.
So give us the website. Some of the people with a pen and paper can pick it up, I guess.
Very simple, nsarchive.org.
Oh, that was simpler than the one I had. Okay, that's good.
And,
we'll give it again before we're done. But I want to get in a few more questions. You say that why did now, like 28,000, was it pages or
files? No, 24,000 documents.
Okay.
Well over 250,000 pages.
So did you and your staff actually read through every one of these?
I read through, in the last several years, pretty much all of them.
Mm-hmm. Why were they available now and not 5 years ago or 20 years ago?
So these were documents that we pressed the Clinton administration to declassify after Augusto Pinochet was arrested in London 5 years ago. His arrest caused a major international outcry. We led a campaign in Washington to press the Clinton administration to release these documents as evidence from the U.S. holdings of Pinochet's involvement in human rights violations. And over a two-year period, the Clinton administration did release 24,000 documents that not only shed tremendous light on Pinochet's atrocities and his own responsibility for those atrocities, but also very much implicated the United States in undermining the Allende government in Chile between 1970 and 73, and then helping Pinochet consolidate his military dictatorship between 1973 and 1976. The documents also shed considerable light on the rest of U.S. policy towards the 17-year Pinochet dictatorship, and this book tells the story of the entire era of Pinochet and his relations with Washington.
Mm-hmm. When you go to the National Security Archive, there's a list of other books and studies and release of documents, and one just keeps seeing the name of Henry Kissinger over and over and over again in the most illegal anti-democratic actions, ones that have led to the deaths of, one might say, if you include Vietnam, which I would, millions of deaths of innocent civilians. Tell us just a little about Henry Kissinger. Why isn't he in The Hague? That's what I want to know.
Because the United States has refused to support the International Court of Justice, fearing that Kissinger would be among the first U.S. Officials who might be brought to trial there, although the court actually is focused on crimes in the future rather than crimes in the past, and Kissinger actually would be exempted. As a former policymaker. But Dr. Kissinger had a very controversial tenure as National Security Advisor to Richard Nixon and then Secretary of State during the period of Gerald Ford. He is the policymaker of continuity on Chile, the person most responsible for the efforts to undermine Salvador Allende's democratically elected government, and the person most responsible for the U.S. policy of embracing Augusto Pinochet irregardless of the atrocities he was committing. And that's why he is the central figure of my book, The Pinochet File.
Mm-hmm. I just got the book yesterday, and it's over 500 pages. But I was skimming through it and was just amazed at some of these documents that have been revealed. And I was looking at one, I guess it's not on a particular page, but it's from the State Department. It's a memorandum of conversation between the U.S. Assistant Secretary for Inter-American Affairs, William Rogers, and Augusto Pinochet, the fascist.
No, that's a memorandum of conversation between Kissinger and Pinochet, and the notes are taken by the Assistant Secretary,
okay.
William Rogers.
So this is when it says the Secretary. This is Kissinger himself.
That is Kissinger himself. And those are his words where he tells Pinochet, we are sympathetic with what you are trying to do here. I think you are just a victim of left-wing propaganda around the world and that your only sin was to overthrow a government that was going communist.
Mm-hmm.
This he says in private to Augusto Pinochet at a time at the height of Pinochet's repression. In public, Kissinger would write in his memoirs about how he pressed Pinochet on human rights and democracy, etc. But when you have the secret transcript of their meeting, you see the message that was really passed to Augusto Pinochet, which is, we support what you're doing here, we're here to help you, not to undermine you, and it would be good if you made some adjustments on human rights, but because Congress is breathing down my neck on this issue, but we think you did a great service to the West, as Kissinger told Pinochet in overthrowing Salvador Allende.
Now, is this the same one, because he's talking about going to appear in front of the United Nations General Assembly, and what he's going to say is kind of warning Pinochet that he's going to have to make some criticisms of the human rights violations in Chile.
Exactly.
So this is, okay. All right.
Exactly. What he does is he goes in and talks to Pinochet privately before his public speech. And instead of saying to him, you know, I'm going to give this speech and I really do care about these issues and you need to hear what I'm saying in this speech, he says to Pinochet, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to say in the speech. I want you to know that the speech is not aimed at Chile. I think, you know, you're a victim of left-wing propaganda, he tells Pinochet.
Now, also in the conversation, Pinochet is concerned about his enemies in Washington, the Chileans that he says has access to Congress.
He names Orlando Letelier as one of those enemies. This is in June of 1976, and Kissinger knew Letelier because Letelier had been ambassador to Washington during the Allende period. And instead of Kissinger saying to Pinochet, you know, Letelier has the right to say what he's saying in Washington, and in fact, what he is saying is absolutely correct about what you're doing here. He's focusing on the fact that you're a dictator and that you're involved in human rights violations, and that is true. Instead of saying that, Kissinger basically doesn't say anything. He says, well, I haven't talked to these people, and I don't know what they're doing. And just a few weeks later, Pinochet and his secret police set in motion the mission to assassinate Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Now, most of these documents are pretty full that appear in the Pinochet file. Some of them are blacked out considerably. What do they call this now? They got some didacted or something like that?
No, it's called redacted.
Redacted. Didacted is something about learning.
The truth is that U.S. censors like to wield the black magic marker in the name of national security, and there are all these blacked out swatches in these documents. But I made a strong effort to figure out what was underneath some of those passages, and in the narrative of the book, I pointed out what we could learn, what we could find out that was being blacked out. And we are continuing to try and get these documents in less censored form so we can find out what's still being hidden from us.
What would they want to hide? I mean, they seemed to have given
everything.
It all.
They went on to hide who they were meeting with, how they passed money and arms and support to Pinochet's forces, the covert operations, what was actually talked about, the type of aid that the CIA gave to Pinochet's secret police, the director of national intelligence called DINA. We have the memorandum of conversation of the CIA's meetings with the head of the Chilean secret police, but much of those documents are censored still because the CIA still does not want the American public to know the extent of the support that it gave to the repressive forces in the Chilean military.
Mm-hmm. Two quick questions. One, in your acknowledgments, you talk about how an incident the day after the coup back in 1973 with a local angle to us here in Detroit.
Well, yes, you know, I lived in Detroit when I was 4 years old and then moved to Ann Arbor when I was 5 years old and went to high school, grew up and went to high school in Ann Arbor, and I was in Ann Arbor Pioneer High School the day after the coup, and a Chilean girl whose family was living in Ann Arbor came into class and started telling the teacher what had happened, and I was only 17 years old, but that was my introduction to the violence that was happening so far away from us and how it was affecting friends of mine at my own high school.
Mm-hmm.
That really was the start of my interest in this work, in this awful history, not only what happened in Chile, but what actually happened in our own country that was part of Chile's tragedy.
This kind of is an echo of a question I asked earlier, and on the flap of the book, it's got a quote by Secretary of State Colin Powell from February this year. He said, "It's not a part of American history that we're proud of." But history, you know, not being learned from, has a tendency to repeat itself.
Well, yes, Powell said that because a student in Washington asked him about how the United States could argue that it had morality on its side in invading Iraq, given what we had done in Chile 30 years ago. And he responded, "It is not a part of our country's history that we are proud of." This is a problem. Unless we have the mechanisms to hold our leaders accountable, what happens is that our leaders stray from the values of the American public. Chile was a strong example of that, and I fear that Iraq will eventually become the same.
The book is The Pinochet File, a declassified dossier on atrocity and accountability. It's a National Security Archive book. And Daniel Shore, the senior news analyst for National Public Radio, says a chilling but cautionary account of how clandestine action can go off the tracks. The author is Peter Kornbluh, and it's published by The New Press. Oh, Peter, one more time, give us the National Security Archive website.
NSArchive.org.
And it will be on my website as well, peterwerby.com. Peter Kornbluh, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on WRIF.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Have you ever had a bad experience at the dentist? A lot of people are afraid of the dentist. Others just don't have the time. Then when they finally do go, there's a lot of work to be done, and it makes them even more afraid or embarrassed. Hi, I'm Dr. Abe Krishanowitz. With Sedation Dentistry, we can make it easier for you to have years' worth of damage repaired in just a few visits. It is simple. Regardless of how many years of neglect you've been through because of fear or lack of time, we will help you achieve healthy teeth and gums for a lifetime. You've put off going to the dentist long enough. Don't wait any longer. What I'd like you to do right now is call 586-247-0010. That's 586-247-0010. Or visit us on the web at mydentistry.com. We've changed people's lives. We can do the same for you. No matter how long you've waited because of fear or lack of time, we will help you. You thought about doing it. This is your opportunity. Call now, 586-247-0010, and receive your initial exam and x-rays for only $19.
Introducing Tocchino, a whole new kind of lottery game.
Oh, hidey, hidey, diddly, hidey, 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 do. Oh, I love to play Tocchino.
I play it with me friends.
We're always at our favorite place.
A good pet never ends.
Tocchino is exciting.
Tocchino makes me grand.
I love to pick me numbers.
As for me, I love to win.
Oh, hidey, hidey, diddly, hidey, 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 do.
Good times are at your favorite restaurant or bar where you can play Club Keno every 5 minutes, 7 days a week. It's from the Michigan Lottery, but it's not like any lottery game you've ever played before. Find out where you can play. Call 1-877-PLAY-KENO.
I went to play Club Keno, and all my friends were there.
We ate, we drank, we laughed a lot, and cheer was everywhere.
I picked my favorite numbers.
I waited for the draw.
When they came up, I won some cash.
Next time, I'll bring me mom.
Oh,
call 1-877-PLAY-KENO.
Gentlemen, the doors are open at the Pantheon Club, and you're always welcome. Here's what's happening. Now on Sundays, join them for Bladder Buster Night. Yep, that's right. Starting at 7 p.m., draft beer is only 50 cents until somebody goes to the bathroom. Think you can hold it? After that, all draft beer goes to $2.75. It's Bladder Buster Nights on Sundays starting at 7 p.m. with 50 cent drafts until, well, that's up to you. But wait, that's not all. Join them next Thursday, November 6th, for their first ever Best Lesbian Kiss Contest. That's right. You saw Britney and Madonna do it. There's $2,000 in prizes up for grabs with $1,000 for first, $600. 600 for second and 400 for third place. This contest is limited to the first 15 couples in the door by 10:30. You can't bear anything. It's just the kiss that'll be judged by the crowd. That's right, the crowd will be your judges for the contest. Guys, get there early to grab a great seat. You won't want to miss out on the fun Thursday, November 6th. It'll be hot and sexy. So come on into the Pantheon Club in Dearborn, located on the corner of Michigan Avenue and Oakman Boulevard. That's the Pantheon Club in Dearborn. The Pantheon, a different kind of topless bar.
Hey, do your kids have a vertical driver's license?
A vertical driver's license? What's that?
It's a new license that reads from top to bottom for kids under 21. It's not like the license you and I carry. It reads across. It's portrait style. It's designed to keep alcohol and tobacco out of the hands of young drivers. It takes the guesswork out of checking IDs.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. At a glance, those in our stores, restaurants, and bars know that your child is not old enough to purchase alcohol or tobacco. It may well be the most important thing you put in their hands.
How do I get one for my daughter?
Just visit any Secretary of State's office. For a small charge, they can turn in their old license for a new vertical one.
Hi, I'm Terry Lynn Land, your Secretary of State. Like you, I want to keep our kids safe. Vertical driver's license will make that easy.
This message from the Michigan Beer and Wine Wholesalers, Michigan Association of Broadcasters, and the Michigan Secretary of State.
The Riff Rocks with Rick Fox. We've got more nonstop rock. Next on the Riff.
Getting ready to talk to your son about underage drinking? Then make sure you avoid the following communication violations.
Yo, yo, yo. What is up, G-Money? Okay.
Adopting a hip tone. Save those attempts to sound with it for the guys in the office. And talk to your kid openly and honestly.
This music sure is cool.
Faking interest in his culture in an effort to bond. Stick to showing interest in him. Something you never have to fake.
Sean, I know you're somewhere in the mall here. Can we talk?
Bad timing. He'll be more likely to remember what you have to say when he's ready to listen. Want more tips? Then check out the free Family Talk About Drinking Guide. Just call 1-800-359-TALK or visit FamilyTalkOnline.com. We all make a difference. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Good in the morning.
Isn't this an indictment of our entire society?
Big Daddy Arthur T. taking you home.
This is 101 WRIF Detroit.
Let's do it. Let's rumble.
Riff Rocks.